This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode...
Stop what? Wait, why are you, like, DJing it? You're, like, throwing your hand out, like, wow, 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 wow.
Welcome to episode 180. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike. That's John. We're going to talk about shows and stuff.
Yeah. And there's a fuck ton of them this week.
Yeah, there's a lot this week.
Because this is the first week that shows started coming back or shows premiered for the fall season, so...
We didn't get any CW shows this week, right?
Correct.
Those are, like, in a couple weeks.
I have more notes this week than I think that I have for the entire summer put together. Because, like, most of the summer, I'd just be like, I watched this show. And then I'd, like, look at the Cliff Notes version. Right. But in this week, like, I watched so many that I had to keep some notes on them. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of notes.
Well, earlier I was talking to you about how, like, sometimes I struggle to find out what I want to watch or see if something's on. I waste so much time trying to find something to watch that then I don't care about watching it.
Right, right, right.
Whereas this week, I was like, I could go on Hulu and just be like, oh, The Good Place. Oh, Superstore. Oh, New Amsterdam. Oh, The Good Doctor. And it's just kind of like things went by real quick.
Yes.
So it's kind of nice.
Yes. And, like, most of the week for me, like, I couldn't watch anything at work. And then I'd get home and I was so burned out that I was like, I'm just going to play Borderlands for a while. And I kept thinking, maybe I'll watch a show in the background. Maybe I won't. And then... yesterday and today, I just sat there and I watched and watched and watched.
Oh, so everything melded together.
Yeah.
I can see why you took so many notes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with American Horror Story 1984. I've only watched the first episode.
Okay, I've watched both of the existing ones.
I just hang on around to watching episode two yet, but I watched the first episode. It's called Camp Redwood. Mm-hmm. In 1984, there's a chick named Brooke Thompson. Is that inappropriate to say chick?
Oh, I think you said it's 1984 inappropriate. I'm like, no, it's fine.
Dude. Anyways, played by Emma Roberts. And she meets some new friends at the... first of all, this show does scream 80s.
It starts off in an extra... an aerobic-sized class.
Yeah, aerobics class. Yeah, yeah. What's wrong with that?
But it's... yeah. And they go around showing everybody's name, and one of them is named Chet.
Yeah.
When's the last time you heard the name Chet outside of the 80s?
Exactly. The soundtrack to this season, based on episode one, is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
So anyways, basically she's new in town, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's new to L.A.
And she immediately gets attacked by the Night Stalker.
So, well, first she immediately makes friends with these people who...
Right, sorry, yes.
Because Billy Lord is basically the town slut.
I don't know. She knows everyone, knows everything, likes her drugs.
Likes her drugs, and they talk about her being rather promiscuous.
Right.
And there's one guy who's an aspiring actor, and one guy who should have been on the Olympics, but, you know, they had a controversy where they said that he did drugs, and they weren't his drugs. Yeah. He must have gotten them, like, somehow accidentally.
Well, the show actually opens in 1975 or something like that, actually, and it's involving, it shows this camp. Where these camp counselors, they have the sex, and then they get attacked by Mr. Jingles and violently murdered, and then he cuts off their ears
to make part of his necklace
because that's his trophy after he kills them. They call him Mr. Jingles because of his keys, and so he gets he murders everyone in the camp and then gets arrested and jailed. So fast forward now to 1984, and we meet, like I said, we meet Brooke, and essentially...
And yes, she gets attacked by...
Attacked by the Night Stalker.
Like, the legitimate Night Stalker.
Right, right.
Richie... Crap, what was his name? All I can think of now is Richie Valens, but it's not.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I can't think of it.
Okay.
Richie Valens is definitely not.
No.
Ramirez.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, Richard Ramirez. So he gets attacked by the Night Stalker, and... and she actually fends him off. she manages to, she hits him in the face with like a cast iron pan and kind of battles back a little bit. And like the cops show up or something of that nature. And so he flees.
Okay.
And she just, and, but he, but basically while he's running off, he's like, I know where, who you are and where you live. And I'm
Satan gonna come, will guide me back to you.
And I'm going to basically come kill you. Mm-hmm. So she decides I got to get out of here. And she had been previously offered like one of the, Jazzercise guys, he was all afraid of the Night Stalker. He's like, I'm getting out of here for the summer. I got this job at the summer camp. You guys should all come with me. And so they're all like, yeah, we will. Yeah.
Back in the day when you could just offer your friends jobs. Yeah. Hey, I've got a job. Why don't you come work with me? Okay.
Okay. So they all, so she's like, nah, I don't want to do that. And then after the Night Stalker breaks and attacks her, she's like, hey, can I come join you guys?
Hey, I want to do that.
At Camp Redwood?
Yeah. Wood.
Anyways, while they're driving there, they hit a hiker on the roadway. Of course, the driver's like, man, I didn't see him. And they're all doing drugs and stuff in the van. And so they take him to the camp. And then when he disappears from the camp later, they're just like, oh, that's cool. He just, he must have left.
Yeah.
But then,
like,
you know.
Like, there's a thing to be said for, you know, like, oh, this is recreating the old 80s camp horror movies. And then there's a, did you have an original thought in your head? Because most of everything that I have seen in that first episode was like they literally just said, copy these movies. Like they handed him a bunch of movies from the 80s and said, copy
this. Well, that's the thing. They definitely play homage to a ton of movies in this.
Yeah.
And the first episode just seemed to go on forever, which I'm not complaining about. I just, a couple, like there was 2 points where I thought, oh, this episode must be over. And it kept going.
Yeah.
Like a long time.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot in these first two. John Carroll Lynch, who was Drew's brother Steve on the Drew Carey Show.
Yep.
And he was also the clown from a couple seasons ago. I can't think of the clown name. He plays Mr. Jingles.
And it's really interesting because at the same time I'm watching another show. It's Perfect Harmony. It's that one with Bradley Whitford with the choirs. And he's in that one as well.
Oh, that's funny.
As the pastor of the mega church, and he's wearing a terrible toupee.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, I'm getting to see him as a minister and a psychopath.
Well, he breaks out of the asylum that he's been held in.
Yeah.
And okay,
didn't it feel like
No.
Like
you said, it didn't feel it like
didn't,
it.
It didn't end.
It was
the episode never ended. It felt like they just like this whole thing was just a movie, and then they were like, "Oh, in the next episode, we'll do something completely different."
Right. Essentially, this whole scene of the nurse pulling up to the asylum and then driving into the asylum is like a shot-by-shot remake of the opening of Halloween.
Thank you.
Which I was cool with, because.
But again, yeah. It's like, here's the movies to copy.
Yeah. Mr. Jingles escapes, and we assume he's heading back to the camp, or he has headed back to the camp. Because when we meet that hiker that they hit by the van, and they stick him in, his ear's been cut off.
Mm-hmm.
We also find out that the girl that's running the camp, she was a victim of Mr. Jingles, and she survived the initial attack.
Basically pretending she was dead.
Yes, including when he cut her ear off, she just didn't react. That's how she survived, and now this is like, I guess
she decided that the best way to honor that was to reopen the camp.
I thought she was basically to get over her fear and prove that there's nothing wrong was to reopen the camp.
She kept saying that it's for the kids.
Yeah, and she, the kids haven't shown up yet. They're showing up the next day.
Right,
but basically,
we still haven't gotten to in the second episode. Right.
Okay, so, we haven't. No. Okay, well, I guess I haven't watched it. But basically, like, you know. Brooke Thompson there, Emma Roberts, her character, sees Mr. Jingles, gets chased by him. But, of course, she's the only one that sees him. No one else believes her. She had too much of the drugs. And then that episode ends with, like, the Night Stalker walking out of the woods and seeing her. But I don't know what happens after that.
Well, I won't spoil it.
Please don't.
But I will say this.
Yep.
You remember a couple seasons back, when they did that thing where it shifted gears, like, I'm trying to remember. So, like, you had those two people who bought the house, and there was something about, like, a cult that was there that owned the house. And then, like, all of a sudden, a couple episodes in, it, like, shifted gears, and they were, like, you found out that it was a recreation, and they were talking about this and doing that.
You're talking about the cult episode or Roanoke? Are you talking about American Horror Story Roanoke?
Maybe. Two people had, like, an old farmhouse, and then there was, like, those weird, creepy farm people that, like, came out of the corn. And then, like, they were doing interviews with the people, you know, and like office style where they would just sit there and talk.
So,
and then it turned out that they were the actors, not the...
Right, American Horror Story, Roanoke did a thing where they had, the show was shot like in multiple different ways. It was done with the documentary style where they do recreations and they interview the actual people. And they interview the actual people involved, like a haunting story or something like
and
that.
And then the actors.
And then they show like a recreation thing.
Yes.
And then it switches gears and now it shows like Blair Witch type thing, you know, the first person, you know, found footage type thing.
Yeah.
And then it switches gears again and now it's actual like an episode of a show where the camera is you watching it.
So I feel like that's what this season is going to do. They haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
So that's not me saying, you know, oh, get ready because that's going to happen. But I feel like we're gearing up to something like that because in the second episode, some things go kind of batshit crazy.
Yep.
Like it's already just an 80s homage as it is. But in the second episode, like it ramps up so fast and some things are so crazy that I'm just sitting here going, they're going to have to do something. Like there's going to have to be like a tape rips or something, like a VHS tape rips, and then they go into a different movie because it's odd. It's very odd. I'm going to stick with it for now.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that I'm going to like this.
All right.
But what do you think? Do you like it?
I enjoyed the first episode thoroughly, and I'm excited to, I enjoyed it.
I'll be interested once you've gotten through the second episode and possibly the third one if, you know.
Yeah, well, next week we'll most likely be talking about episodes 2 and 3.
Yeah.
What's of interest or what's note or whatever is that Evan Peters, who's been in from season 1 till now, and he plays Quicksilver in X-Men, the new X-Men, is not in this season.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So,
although one of the guys that's in there, it took me a minute to recognize him, but he was the main teacher on Glee.
Yes, he was in. He's been in previous,
and he basically his claim to fame in this is that he was in the Jane Fonda workout video. Well, no, not the one that you see on the shelves because you know I was too much of a distraction.
Because apparently his dick is huge.
Yeah,
based on the bulge in his tiny shorts.
Yeah, so basically they had to remove me from that, and you only saw me in that because it was a bootleg copy.
Yeah,
I was distracting people from looking at Jane.
Yeah, with his giant. And meat.
Yeah.
Who Billy Lord's character immediately wants to do.
Because, you know, that seems to be her character.
So I watched The Good Doctor as well.
Yep.
Did you watch this first episode?
I did.
It
was enjoyable.
So the cool thing about this episode, I guess, is the fact that it's all centered around the story about Sean talking about his date with,
I always just want to call her Astrid.
I know, that's all I'm thinking right now. Anyways, but Astrid, we'll just say Astrid.
Yep.
And in between everything going on, Sean's talking about his date and how disastrous and how terrible it was.
He keeps saying that. It was a disaster. And, but everyone keeps waiting for the disaster.
Right, and they'll show like, and it's funny because he'll be telling the story and it goes to like, oh, he knocks this giant bottle of wine or champagne out of the waiter's hand. But then he catches it, like when they come back to it. Or something else goes wrong, but then he catches it, or this, that, or whatever. Or
he tells a really stupid joke at the wrong time, but she chuckles.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you got to chuckle. That's a good thing.
So finally, at the end, they're all just like, wait a second. Wait a second. I thought, like, what went wrong? Like, it sounds like a great date. You averted disaster the whole time. And to him, it wasn't great because the whole entire time he had to...
It was too much. He basically had to
improvise. It wasn't structured and planned. Yep. He couldn't be prepared in advance. He had to wait to see what would happen. He stressed out about it. He overthought things. It was just too much.
Yep. It was
chaos to him.
Yep. And he hates chaos.
Yep.
He needs order and structure. And so to him, that was the disastrous part, was that he and it was really, I really
Everything
liked how he said it.
It was unpredictable.
It was unpredictable. And he said, I was so uncomfortable. I did so much work. I put forth so much effort. And I don't even know if I did a good job. I don't even know if she liked it. And was the thing that killed him the most was, you know, if you put a lot of effort into something, you should get results out of it. And in this case, he's not even sure if he got good results out of it.
That's
which
true.
He hates. And I could kind of relate to that because I get that, you know? You put in a lot of effort, you try all this stuff out, and then you don't know. you don't know if the other person liked it or if you're going to get a second date or if they're going to call you back or if they're just going to be like, no, I'm all set. So, yeah, that was the worst part for him. He's like, it's not worth it. And they tried to tell him. They were like, oh, well, it's worth it if you have somebody who loves you and who, you know, compliments you and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah.
So.
And then they show the different types of love and romance, like the old couple with the guy with dementia who has cancer and doesn't remember being told he has cancer and what they're going through. And then the newlywed couples where she has this horrible cancer through her body and they have to, and now she has to have basically a poop bag attached to her for the rest of her life. And
she only had a 25% chance to live. So correct. I'd say it's a small price.
Right. But basically, you know, and he's like, don't worry about it. We'll take care of this. We'll do this together. We'll learn how to do this. And so like, you have a couple at the end of their marriage, if you will, a couple at the beginning of their marriage, but they both have things that the medical things they're dealing with. And so you see those different types of things, and you see like one doctor's like, oh, I feel so bad for them. They're so great. And the other doctor's, oh, I feel so bad for them, but they're so great. And then Sean's like, none of it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I like how his relationship with Leah has gotten to the point where she is just beyond sister, where he's just like, I'm just going to change my pants in front of you. No big deal. And she's like, no. his comfort level with her is to the point where she is definitely not a love interest for him.
Right.
At all.
Right. She's, and they both seem to be very.
Right. Which is better than awkwardness of them liking each other, loving each other. But like I said, there's a couple good stories in this episode with the dementia guy with cancer who will live 3 to 5 more years and be fine, as opposed to having to be reminded every single day that he has cancer, he has to go to chemo, he has to have radiation, he has to go to all these treatments, and it's not going to extend his life, really.
Right. And basically, they're like having to explain to him why he's throwing up, why he feels sick, why his hair is falling out, having to explain that multiple times a day because he's going to keep forgetting.
Yeah.
And his wife, you know, she was like, I've never lied to him in all the years that we've been together. Right. I don't want to start now. And then she did at the end, you know, he's like, why am I here? And she's like, you're fine. They didn't find anything.
Honestly, she made the right choice.
She did.
Like, if I was a dementia guy and I was dying, I wouldn't want to know I was dying. I'd rather be blissfully ignorant at that point.
Yep.
And just not understand when something's wrong because you forget that something's wrong.
Exactly.
Especially, yeah. Anyways. And then, of course, the other love story of the newlywed couple where, like we said, we find out she's riddled with cancer, has a 25% chance of living, but Sean thinks of this, like, dramatic or...
Basically taking the organs out because they were in the way.
Everything out of her body and cleaning all the organs off from the cancer and the tumors individually and then putting them all back in. But there was some issue with some bowel and...
Right, so her bowel got shortened. And basically, he actually made a good call on that because they were like... he says, you know, they've done this to other people before. And they're like, have you ever heard of it succeeding? And he's like, no, nope. But the alternative is death.
Yeah.
You know, so it's either death or we give you a slim shot.
I do like the fact when they need time to think about it, Sean's like, I don't know why you need more time to think about this.
Yeah. And then which makes sense.
He's like,
are you trying to come up with a way to find a new lover or something like that?
Yeah. Are you trying to think about how, you know, yeah, exactly. Just the way he asks, like, I don't understand what's taking this.
And then the guy's
this.
Like, no, not at all. The woman goes, you should be.
Yes.
She's like, if I die, you should find somebody else. And he's like, I'm not even thinking about that right now.
Yeah. It's one of those things where Sean's point of view of things is just kind of spot on.
It is.
You know, it's like either you are going to die, or we're going to try to do the surgery, and you might live longer, or you might die from the surgery, but if you don't do the surgery, you have less than a year, and you will die.
Yep.
I watched New Amsterdam.
Yes, that was really interesting.
Yeah.
It was a very Houseian kind of episode.
Yeah, because basically the beginning of the flick is the doctor. He seems to have more hair. It's 3 months later. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up and the baby's crying and his wife goes in bed with him. She's like, hey, it's your turn. He's like, it's always my turn. And he gets out and gets the baby. And then he brings her to the hospital and everything. And then he goes about his day. And we learn that one of the paramedics died.
Because at the end of the last season, there was him and his wife were being rushed to the hospital in an ambulance with Freema, Jima, you know.
Yeah. Stark, Spark, whatever.
Yeah. And another ambulance hit that one, which, really?
Well, it was,
how often does that happen?
No. The other ambulance hit it because the guy stole it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yes. Someone stole the ambulance.
Sorry, because it had been so long since that, and I saw the flashback, and I was just like,
Yeah. Patient stole the ambulance.
Right. So, and yeah. So, as you were saying,
one of the paramedics died.
But we were basically told that they lost two of their own.
Yes.
And so they kept playing the game of who was the other person that died.
Right. And so they slowly keep revealing, like, the British doctor, the British black doctor that was his oncologist. Mm-hmm. She finally shows up partway through the episode. Oh, okay, so she's alive. And then we saw his wife at the beginning, so she's alive. And then and that other doctor shows up.
The one who was the addict.
Yeah, the one that was the addict who had that bad ankle break. And she shows up, and they all clap for her and everything. And she's taking her ER back. And, of course, she's struggling with the – you know, she has severe pain, but she can't do anything for it and everything like that. And then, you know, everyone's going through their day, and there's some good stories here and there or whatever. And
I enjoy the people and their stories.
Yeah.
You know, as we're getting to know them. Like the Indian doctor there who always has such a good way of diagnosing people. Basically, his whole story is he's old.
He's feeling like he's old and, useless.
And he should be replaced. And
he
has that old woman that comes in who's been having trouble with her arthritis. And he's like, if I can't figure out what's wrong with you, I'll retire today. Because the head doctor there, I can't even think of his name, Tom.
Max.
Okay, Max. He, you know, he was approached and they're like, there's an awful lot of old doctors in this hospital and we need to find a way to prepare for when they leave, you know, pass on that knowledge. And he's like, are you telling me there's too many old doctors? You know, maybe what we need to do is get rid of them. So
essentially the Indian doctor tries all these different things. Oh, this is why, because you take this, or this is why, because of this, or this is why, and this is why, and this is why.
And it's always funny because he goes to the guy who's running the test, like, oh, it's heavy metals because you've been taking this. And the guy's like, no, not heavy metals.
And in the end, she's got an abscess in her tooth because she doesn't brush her teeth and she doesn't floss.
Yep.
And she's sitting there eating some popcorn, having a snack, and it's a kernel stock. Mm-hmm. So they examine her mouth. She's got this huge abscess. It's infected, and her pills are not being able to help her body because
all of it's going right there.
Yeah. And so guy gets cleaned up, and your arthritis medication will start working again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But that's almost like a house-type move.
Exactly.
But Max runs into this one doctor who just – and the doctor goes, you can't avoid me forever. And Max goes, yeah, well, I am today. And he keeps walking. We don't know what's happening. And then Max gets home, and he brings the baby in, and his wife's still in bed. And then you're like, oh, red flag.
Mm.
And then they do this whole montage where it cuts – because throughout the episode, they keep cutting back to 3 months ago when the crash happened, and now we're here. And 3 months ago, and now we're here. And they do the montage where you see that the wife died. She got a brain bleed. And she died on the operating table. And the guy that Max refused to talk to was the doctor that was trying to operate to save her.
And said, I did everything I could.
But, yeah. You know, and I'm so sorry. And that's why we lost two of our own.
And to kind of punctuate that, she says, it's your turn. And he says, it's always my turn.
And he gets up to get the baby. And then when it cuts back to the bed, she's gone.
And it's all made up.
But, yeah. So kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sad. But
it was.
On the other side, this new cancer treatment that they're doing, Max's cancer is in remission and he's doing great and he's healthier and putting on weight and his hair is coming back and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
And it could get published, but, you know, the oncologist and the researcher are both butting heads because, you know, one fired the other.
And
yeah. I'm still enjoying the show.
Me too. Me too. Going back to other returning shows, because I want to do all the returning shows first, if that's all right. Yeah. I didn't make that clear, I realized, at the beginning.
You did not.
I failed you. Speaking of failing.
You failed this city.
I know. This Is Us came back.
So I took a lot of notes on this one, because there was a lot going on. And I don't know about you, but my notes were based on the different characters, so they're not in order of the show, but it was like, you know, Jennifer Morrison's character. And then I took the notes to run down her story and what I called Shirtless Guy.
Okay.
Shirtless Guy with a dog. And
essentially, the overview I'll just say real quick is that we're introduced to three new characters, and we don't know why.
More than three, because...
Three new primary characters, and then all the secondary characters in their lives that we got.
Families and friends. And
so the four stories...
The whole episode's called Strangers.
Yes. So the four stories we see in this is these three new people that we meet, plus their families. And we, Rebecca and Jack,
When they first got back from their
yes, they first got trip. Back from their trip, and Jack meets her parents for the first time. Yes. Also, he meets Miguel for the first time,
which was great,
at the suit store.
The whole theme of this episode being strangers was a line that Rebecca said to him, which was along the lines of, actually, I think I wrote it down, a single cross with a person you've never met can change everything.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be, you know, basically talking about how somebody can be a stranger one day and you don't know why you're meeting them, and then one way or another, they could turn out to be ridiculously important.
Right. And it's kind of funny because we have two stories that I will say. So other than Jack and Rebecca's story, which takes place in the past, we have two stories of the three new people we meet that takes place in current times. And one story that we find out at the end takes place like 20-something years in the future.
Yeah.
At least.
Yep. Although we think that it's taking place in current.
Correct. Times. It's not to the very end where they go, we go, oh.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll let you actually run lead on this, where you have all your notes the way you broke them down.
So, like Mike said, you know, the basic, Rebecca's parents were dicks. We've met her mom before. This is the first time we've met her dad.
Yes.
And who's the actor that plays him? He was the villain in the Brady movie. He plays a dick. And
real, I mean, to the dick to the point, Rebecca's like, I told my dad not to talk about the war. Oh, thanks. First thing he says.
Literally the first thing. So, Rebecca tells me you just got back from Vietnam. And it's just like, and it goes downhill from there. And then even when you think he's being a good guy, like he looks over at Jack and he kind of, you know,
he sees lets him know that the
tag's sticking out. And Jack covers it up. You think he's being a nice guy. And then he basically tells him this story later on when they're alone. He's like, yeah, when she was a little girl, she wouldn't stop crying for anyone but me. Her mother could hold her. Her sister could hold her. And only when I was holding her would she stop crying. And people were like, oh, you know, she's daddy's little girl. And I said, no, she is daddy's whole world. And basically says, you're not good enough for my daughter.
Yeah.
She deserves better. And I'm going to make sure she gets better. So you're not going to get past me.
Which we know doesn't work out.
Yeah, and like I said, this is the first time we've ever seen him, so I can't help but think that
something happened.
Heart attack, something.
Yeah. Jack kills him. No.
Yep. So, it was really cool seeing Jack and Miguel for the first time together, too, because Miguel was just a salesman in the suit store and, you know, basically told him, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I just got back, and blah, blah, blah. And Miguel's like, can you believe it? My number wasn't called. I'm a Puerto Rican kid. Why wasn't it called?
Right, yeah.
He's like, I don't know why I wasn't over there. You know, gives him the go-ahead to just kind of take the suit and keep the tag on and bring it back after the weekend.
Yeah, he's like, is she worth it? More than anything, yeah. All right, just tuck it in your sleeve then. No big deal.
So one of the characters that we meet, Jennifer Morrison, her character, and I wish that I had written down her name for some reason. I just kept calling her. She was in the Army. And she was over in Afghanistan.
And M. Night Shyamalan was in this episode?
Interesting.
He's in this season. I'm sorry. I was scrolling up to see. I wanted to see what her name was so I could tell you.
I want to say like Cassie or something.
I think you're right. I was scrolling up because I wanted to see. Yeah, Cassidy Sharp.
Cassidy, okay.
Tim Matheson played Dave Malone.
Thank you, Tim Matheson.
I was scrolling up because I wanted to see who it was, and I see here guest starring, and then M. Night Shyamalan.
So, again, much as, you know, This Is Us always does this, these are all interspersed. So I'm going to tell you what Jennifer Morrison's Cassidy was doing. But
yeah,
it was all kind of interspersed. So basically, she was in the Army. Mm-hmm. She was an intelligence officer. She was down in Afghanistan, and they were looking for a bomb maker. There was this one woman in a village with a baby who had knowledge of this bomb maker. She had a picture of it. And she's like, you need to get me this picture. The woman had been promising her the picture. And she's like, look, I told you I'm going to get a visa for you and your child. Get me that picture or I'm walking. And basically the woman was like, we need water for our village. She's like, fine, I'll get you water. Just get me the picture. And almost walks out on her. They finally get the picture of the guy. She's like, all right. She got the picture. She's excited. They're going to capture the guy and interrogate him. Well, then her boss comes in the next day and is like, we predator droned him. Took out the backside of a building. He's dead. We lost like 8 villagers. Don't worry, though. Your contact is still okay. We're working on the visa for her and her kid. And so that traumatizes her. She comes home and she's still got those ghosts of the dead people that she feels responsible for because she got the picture of the guy and they droned it. So she becomes the disgruntled, disheartened veteran. You know, she's day drinking, drove PTSD. Home drunk, PTSD. Her husband and son are both trying to get her to come around. Husband's doing the typical, you know, you never talk to me, you don't tell me what's going on. And she actually lashes out at one point. She gets overwhelmed because of the $1,200. He says, you know, the water heater is going to be $1,200 to fix. And that was how much they paid people for dead people over there.
$1,200, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Somebody in your village was killed by us. Here's $1,200 each. You know, that's the price of a human life. So when he said $1,200, it triggered her. And then her son's like yanking on her arm. And she just kind of
smacked him.
And dad kicks her out. You know, you're not welcome here anymore. Get out. So then she goes to Veterans Affairs. She ends up in an AA meeting.
Eventually.
Yeah. It takes her a while, but she kind of hits rock bottom from the looks of it. I don't think we've seen mm-hmm. all the steps in there, but she ends up in an AA meeting and she's talking about it. And as she's talking, there's almost an explosion, but it's basically somebody threw a chair through the window.
Mm-hmm.
And they look out and it's Uncle Nicky.
Yep.
So you're like, oh, so this is how she's going to get connected to the Pearsons.
Yep.
That was happening in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Then we have, like I said, this was the shirtless blind dude with a cute white dog.
Yes.
We didn't know he was blind at first. He was just a guy who...
We don't even learn his name.
No, not until the very end.
Yeah.
So shirtless dude just kind of wakes up and you see a bunch of alcohol bottles around the house. So he's got this cute white dog. Really awesome dog.
Puppy.
Yep. But he has this, he sits down at his computer and he offers the dog like a piece of bacon and the dog like puts his paw up on the plate and it shatters the whole plate. And he really gets upset about the plate. You know, he's really.
Knocks it out of his hand. Yeah. Yep. And he gets all upset.
So he's like telling the dog to stay back. And this is where we discover he's blind because he's like reaching down to pick up the pieces and he picks them all up.
Doesn't want the dog to get cut.
Absolutely. Yep. So. Instead, he goes to a diner for breakfast, and he has a really awesome thing where he's basically standing there with his cane, and the waitress comes up, and she's like, sir, do you want to be seated? Sir, can I help you? And she touches him on the shoulder, and he goes, why would you do that? I'm blind. Oh, my God, why would you sneak up on me? And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. So he talks to her and flirts with her, and as the episode goes on, you basically see the two of them. Like, he can see light.
Her name is Lucy.
Yes. He can see some light and some blurry shapes, but he can't make anything solid out. So he's not 100% in the dark blind, but he's very blind. And then his whole story just seems to be like these little snippets where you see the two of them dating, you know? And then you see the two of them at home with the dogs bigger and...
See, that's the progression of time is the dog's getting bigger.
Yes. And then the dog is wearing like a little tuxedo jacket and has the ring in his mouth and he's helping to propose to Lucy. What I thought was really cool was that up on the wall was the broken dish.
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
Because, you know, that's how they met was because of that broken dish. And this is where it got really interesting because, you know, they go to get married, and then you see that they're talking about how they opened a restaurant, and geez, I really wanted to get it up and running, but she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, oh my God, that's amazing. And
he also wrote a song about her.
Yes.
That's important. After he met her, he went back and he wrote a song about strangers falling in love or something.
Yes.
Then we see all this progression.
Yes, because he says that he's a songwriter.
And much of her progression of their relationship is him singing the song, too. Yes. Yeah.
Which was a good song, especially when we get the final version at the very end of his tale, which is him walking out to a packed auditorium, center stage with no band or anything, belting out this song for everybody in attendance there. And you're like, oh, he's a singer-songwriter.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's very talented. He's very good. And this is when we discover that the truth of it is he's Toby and Kate's baby.
Yes, he's Jack Damon.
Yep, Jack Damon.
Because we see Toby and
Kate
at the doctor's office, and the doctor comes in. He's basically like, at first when the doctor's like, oh, he's not following fingers, he's not responding to this and that, I thought they were trying to say that the kid had autism or was retarded or something of that nature. But instead it was... He basically is blind.
Yep.
Like, he'll never have full vision. Like, he says, he sees light, this and that.
Yep.
But we obviously know he turns out fine. He's the first Pearson to actually make it as a singer, apparently.
Yeah. And, wow, what a crowd he was in front of.
Yeah.
But, you know, him and his wife, she's pregnant. They opened up a restaurant together. He's this famous singer-songwriter, so there's going to be some good stories there, I'm sure.
Yep.
the third new person that we meet is Malik.
Yep.
Malik is a school kid. Essentially, from the sounds of it, he's like a junior, maybe a senior in high school.
Yes.
And again, we get you have to infer a lot of the stuff from it. But basically, he lives at home with his parents. Mm-hmm. His dad is foreman from
Omar Epps.
Yes, Omar Epps from House. And his dad owns a garage. Malik works there. Malik has a baby.
Yep.
Malik seems to be the primary custodian of this.
See, baby. We don't know what happened to the baby's mom.
Right.
But Malik is definitely a junior or a senior at most in high school, and he's a good cook, apparently,
He's a good cook, but we also don't really see him, like, he goes to the school to talk to his friends, but you don't see him in school.
That's true as well.
He is working with his dad.
He could be out of high school. He just looks so young.
He really does look young. And those, the two kids that he was talking to were talking about like third period and homeroom. Why are we wasting all this time in homeroom? It's, you know, roll call, you know, hey, Malik. And he goes, what? And they go, see, that's all roll call is. You know, you basically say that you're here. Yeah. Why do we waste 20 minutes a day with it?
Malik's looking at his phone the whole time.
Yes.
Which you find out later is the baby monitor.
Yes. Yeah, he's because they say to him, they're like, you know, oh, man, you keep watching that girl of yours. And he's like, oh, man, if your girl was this perfect, you'd watch her all the time, too. And yeah, it's the baby monitor. He seems to very much love his child. His parents are super supportive in helping him out. It's a very loving family, which seems weird in this day and age. But, you know.
Well, actually, my cousin, Chrissy. Her son, you know, made a great judgment of error when he was 16 and impregnated his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I think he might have been 15 when he did it.
Ooh.
And then the baby, I mean, the baby's like 2 now, and he just graduated high school this year. Oh, yeah, we were living over on Oak Street. Well, he just graduated this year.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend graduates in May or June or whenever they graduate. And they're both in the kid's life, and they stay a few nights. Like, they stay, like, I don't know. They have basically a pattern where Chase and the baby and his girlfriend all stay at Chrissy's house and then her parents' house.
Oh, nice.
Back and forth so that their mom and dad and baby are all together, and both sets of parents are helping make this happen, which
that's
is
cool.
Really amazing.
But also unheard of. Like,
yeah. But, yeah.
So, Malik, he's working one day at the garage, and this guy who... He seems like a dirty guy, you know.
He's a drug money hustler.
Yeah. And Malik's basically like, hey, I'd love to get some work from you. And the guy's like, dude, you can't even grow a mustache.
No, he said, you're Darnell's son. That's not happening.
Yep. I actually had that written down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Malik's like, come on, I can do it. And he goes, why don't you give me a call and you can grow a beard?
Yeah, something like that. Because Malik's basically like, I got this girl I got to take care of. I want her to have the best of everything. Like, a preschool's like 10 grand, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But my favorite, when he goes, you're Darnell's kid. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know that there's a big story there. And it was interesting, too, because they're fixing up this one car for a woman, and there's a bumper sticker on there that says Pearson for city council.
Yes. Yeah.
So you're like, oh, that might be the path. So his dad sits him down, has a talk with him because he wanted to go to his friend's barbecue.
And mom said, no, I got to work tonight. You need to be a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was actually okay with it. You know, he wasn't like, he was like, all right, you're right. And so his dad kind of sat down with him and had a talk. And he's like, look, you know, I was on the same path. You know, I did the same thing. I had you when I was really young. And, you know, I regretted some things, but I made sure that I took care of you first and foremost, you and your mom, and that was my thing. He goes, so you're going to that barbecue. I will spend some quality time with my granddaughter, and I'm going to hang out with her. And
because he's like, you may be a dad, but you're still like a kid, and you need to experience life. Go hang out with your friends at the barbecue.
Yep. So he goes to the barbecue, and he seems to be, you know, everyone likes, oh, hey, Malik's here. All right, Malik. Yeah.
He immediately starts taking over cooking.
That's right.
He's a great cook. Because even the dad's like, well, I need a Western omelet in the morning. And
hash browns.
Yeah.
Full on. And then one of the girls is like, hey, Malik, have you met my friend here? She's new to the area. Her name's Deja.
Yes. So we're in New Jersey.
No.
Right? No, Philly.
Philly. Yeah. Yep. And then you see Randall and family unpacking their stuff. And Deja comes in with a great big smile on her face. And he's like, What's wrong with your face?
I love it. Deja, what's that on your face?
Yeah.
And she just walks off.
So that's how he's going to tie in.
And they're celebrating the birthdays, too. That's the other thing. They're 39, I guess, in the show. But, like, they're doing Randall's birthday. And then Kate and...
Toby.
No, they have the brother.
Oh, Kevin.
Kate and Kevin are with Miguel and Mom, and they're all to do the birthday. And that's when Kevin gets the phone call that Nikki's been arrested. And that's where everything comes together.
Because the first episode of every season of the show has been on the birthday.
Yes, and I like the fact that the show opens up and it's 3 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, this is what's happened the last 3 months or whatever it is.
They do a very good job of keeping it within a one-year period.
They actually did a lot of shows that way. Like, New Amsterdam Star opened up 3 months later. The Good Doctor opened up 3 months later. This one 3 months later. Even Superstore opened up 3 months later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they finally realized that audiences appreciate that a lot more than having to say, oh, well, I wonder how much time has passed in this TV world.
Exactly.
So overall, I will be honest. This is us when we first started watching it. Both of us, I remember, coming onto this podcast and saying, you know, I can't believe how much I like this show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we were quite shocked by it. I'm going to be honest. Watching this one, I got very emotional.
Yeah.
Like, this was a very emotional episode, especially the theme of strangers. You know,
yeah.
They do a great job telling a story in this show.
They really do a good job telling a story because they introduced the three new people that we didn't know and made you care about them by the end of the episode.
Not only care about them, but say, whoa, how are they going to tie in with
the
Pearsons? And obviously they will. Already people are theorizing that... Jennifer Morrison is going to turn out to be the mother of Kevin's child that we've seen in the future.
Oh,
little
yeah.
Blonde kid.
Yeah,
you know.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Show sounds like it's gotten extremely complicated.
It has. And
it has.
So wonderful.
Like, it has the level of drama that you would love.
I couldn't take it.
But it doesn't have the... Well, because it got too complex. With the stories and the stories and the stories and building, building, building and all these arcs you have to keep track of.
And it's
everything.
Only more complex now because
it's
now we've introduced
even more
three
complex,
more
yeah.
people.
I know. I've been listening to you guys.
It's kind of like, all right, so Game of Thrones you can keep track of, but everyone's
because people kept dying.
Right.
So it closed storylines.
No, you'd have to keep asking me, okay, so what's going on and how's this relation? And we'd stop and watch. But it was not 22 episodes to watch to keep track of.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no. But yeah, the story arcs on the show, I mean – I can only imagine, much like Lost, they had to have a giant whiteboard up on the wall and, like, the relations of where they're going and how they're doing and everything, and this is where we're going to have
probably look like a serial killer's map.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I feel like nowadays when on a lot of television shows like this one, like, you can't do the old days of, like, what are we going to do this week?
Right. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. A show like Superstore, sure. They can
do that.
They could say, let's have an episode where we do this. Oh, don't forget we've had a Halloween episode coming up. But, you know, with this one, this is roadmap territory.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
They've got this planned out, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's see here. Speaking of Superstore, that show came back.
Yes.
It was the level of nonsense you'd expect.
Yeah, and like you said, they came back 3 months later.
Mateo is still in jail or prison or whatever.
Yep.
The detainment center.
ICE.
Yeah, detained by ICE. And... What's her face is feeling guilty about it.
Cheyenne. Oh, Dina.
No, Dina.
Dina's
like Dina's feeling guilty. Like
she keeps rewatching the security cameras. Like, why didn't I tell him to go here?
Oh no, this is just 1 week after. This is 1 week later.
Oh, is
That's
it?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, 1 week later. Dina and Marcus try to deduct, you know, some sort of plan to break Mateo out, and Garrett's kind of there reluctantly. You know, he's like, we're going to wait for the guards to go to sleep. Yeah, because a place like this doesn't have guards 24 hours a day. They just go to sleep at night with the inmates.
I love that this guy is now a regular on the series.
Maybe you could put a big picture of a moon outside one of the windows. That way the guards will think that, oh, it's time for us to go to bed. And you can get it done earlier in the day.
And then when they all dress up like Mateo, and he's like, so wait, there's going to be four Mateos?
Yeah.
And she's like, best case scenario, we all escape. Second best case scenario, they get one of us. Third best scenario, because they're getting
four best scenarios. Yeah. They bring out a new like robot that's supposed to like be a giant, clean the floors or do whatever.
Because now it's Cloud 9.0.
Yeah. And it's like, so you think you just put 0.0 after means it's high tech? Yeah.
And what's the robot's name?
Tosh.0. And they go, well, look, Tosh.0, I mean, that's high tech. Yeah, that's not how it works. The robot's name, they put a name tag on the robot because they wanted to make it feel more friendly to customers and this and that and everything. And Amy's got it covered up with tape. And Dina's like, no, we just need to rip it off. And they rip it off and it says Glenn. It's Glenn with one N instead of two N's. So Glenn's like, well, that's Glenn with one N instead of two N's. That's not me. But then, like, the robot, like, tries to, like, push Glenn off a ladder. And yep. And it cleans up Glenn's mess that Glenn's there to mop up. He gets there and cleans it
he's
up first.
He's trying to get rid of me.
Yeah. And then he's accusing the robot of, like, wanting to sleep with his wife and raise his daughter. He thinks he can do better than me. And then, yeah. Yeah. And then they try to put the robot in the compactor.
Yeah.
And Jonah's trying to, like, calm him down. We can't do this. And then finally Amy shows up at the end because she feels bad because Cheyenne hasn't visited Mateo yet. Mm-hmm. Cheyenne's had bad experience where she visited her mom in jail and she would cry the whole time. So her mom said, you're actually making this worse. So Cheyenne doesn't want to make it worse, but then Cheyenne's having some pretty big emotional problems because of Mateo being in jail. So
she doesn't want anyone touching the end cap that was the last one he made.
So Amy makes Cheyenne go to the jail.
Tricks her, basically.
Yeah, tricks her into it and makes her go. And while she's there, obviously Amy feels like we can't let corporate take care of us. We can't make corporate, like, give us this robot. So they kind of have this plan where, like, oh, it took the service elevator up to the roof and then it rolled off the roof. But instead, when it hits the ground, it rights itself and continues on.
Uh-huh.
And I swear they played, like, the Terminator music.
I thought so, too.
Rolling away.
By the way, related to this, in real life, the actress who plays Myrtle just died the other day.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the little old lady. So I wonder if they're going to do a In Loving Memory of, or if they're going to have a tribute episode. Because remember, she was like there in hologram form and stuff.
Yep.
So.
And we got The Good Place back for its fourth and final season.
And much like the other seasons, it started off a bit, I don't want to say slow, but it started off like, all right, we're going to lay the groundwork here.
Yes. Yep.
Because they're basically, this is the end game. They're trying to prove that people can be better.
Yes.
So they rebuilt the neighborhood and they filled it, instead of with demons, this time they filled it with their people and Janet and Derek.
Derek and Derek babies, basically.
I love Derek so much.
And then they had to have four humans come in, but then Chidi, of course, asked to have his mind wiped because they brought in his ex-girlfriend, and he knew he would never be able to do this with knowing who she is, and so they wiped his mind, so he was just going to be there. But then, because the bad place got to choose the humans, mm-hmm. and so every human they chose was to mess with them somehow. However, Linda...
What a douchebag there.
Yeah. However, Linda is... Oh, by the way, the douchebag that rolls in, Brent?
Yes.
That was Dawn from How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted him to take his pants off at one point and be like, what does it matter?
So anyways, so the bad place put these people in, but every single one of them attaches to one of them somehow. And Linda, they can't figure out what her reason is, but all of a sudden Linda starts, she just wants a peppermint and she wants to float just a little bit off the ground. Oh yeah, it's great to be
here.
She's
like the most boring person in the world, basically.
Yes, yeah. And then she snaps and punches them and then flies around and beats up a bunch of people. And turns out Linda's a demon in disguise.
Yeah.
The bad place put in there to undercut everything, but they weren't supposed to wait, you know, to day two and do it. They were supposed to do it like way down the line.
Right.
So the judge gets involved and basically says, look, we're going to get the demon out of there. If the bad place tries anything again to mess with this, I'm going to restart this. But basically, they have 1 year to prove that people can do better based on the new scoring system that was laid out.
Yep.
And the judge deems that Chidi will now be the fourth human in the test because, well, he's already had his mind wiped and he's already there.
Yep.
So that makes sense.
Yep. So again, it was... mostly just a groundwork episode.
Yes.
Yeah, they had to say this is what the dynamic is going to be. Janet is struggling a little bit because all the people that she created, plus the neighborhood, she essentially is keeping them all in existence. So anytime somebody has a request of her or, like, you know, Eleanor said, oh, just make a river out of popcorn. it's frying her a little bit more.
Yep.
And Chidi's girlfriend has basically figured out that, or in her mind, she's figured out that this is all just an illusion and she must be in a coma or something. So she's just doing the whole...
She's just waiting until she wakes up or she dies.
Right. So she is just fucking with everything. It's kind of cool. We'll see what else
came. I don't know of any other shows that I've watched that came back.
Schooled came back.
Okay, I gotta add that to the list.
Okay.
I watched it
then. Oh, you did?
I watched it, okay. Yes. It was the
Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds parody episode, basically.
Oh, it was great. I love it when she threw the candy at the kid because he gave the right answer.
Yeah.
Hit him right in the face, and they're like, why would you do that?
Well, next time, why don't you throw it to someone that's more athletically inclined to catch it? Yeah. And then she gives her phone number to one of the students, and the gym teacher's like, that was a mistake. You know, next thing you know, you're going to be, like, chauffeuring them around or being a butler or whatever. And then one kid tries to prank her using, like, that talk boy thing from Home Alone. And she falls for the prank.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah, because she's going to go to Fiona Apple's concert, and they say, you know, just go out to her trailer with your guitar and pound on the door and be insistent, because some of our security people might not know about the prize that you won. She's like, okay.
We don't get to see her do that, but she talks about, well, I went and did it, and it didn't work out for me.
And her and Barry, he's not there, but her and Barry are still trying to make it work, so they've got cellular telephones that they're using to make the long distance work, and CJ doesn't like that very much.
And
what'd you think of the new bio teacher?
Okay, so we get the new bio teacher, and at first, basically, she's like, all your kids are stupid, because she's a tough teacher who doesn't fall for their shit and has a level of expectation that no one else seems to have, which is, like, you know, be good students.
Yeah.
I liked her.
Yeah. Like, she calls one of them on her bullshit dead parakeet thing. She's like, I can't write the paper for you because I get a dead parakeet. And she goes, all right, bring it in. What do you mean, bring it in? CJ says that. He's like, what do you mean she has to bring it in? She's like, well, she either brings me the paper or she brings me the dead parakeet, and I apologize to her. But
either, and then we dissect the parakeet and have a good lesson.
Yep. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Now, this wasn't a network show, but Disenchantment returned this week. Did you watch any?
I watched the first episode of Disenchantment.
Okay. I watched the first four, but I didn't want to go much farther because it was funny.
I watched the first episode of Disenchantment, like I said, and it's funny as hell.
I love that show. I love her aunt and uncle. Like, the interactions that she had with them, it was, welcome to Maru, the birthplace of sand. That's where her mother takes her. You know, now the whole kingdom's been turned to stone, and her dad's, you know, rotting away back there. She has like one, she's like, what's behind that? They said, you know, ask us any questions. What's behind that door? Nothing. Sorry. Nothing.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, you must be tired from all these questions. She'd ask like one question.
Yeah. I don't have any notes on it. So keep going.
She said something about, you know, like, well, what about this? And he goes, oh, I can explain. Well, good night. Walked away.
And then there was like her other uncle or cousin or something of that, the one that had the brain damage.
Oh my God. He was so awesome. I didn't write down his name, but I loved him so much. Her mother gives her a bowl of soup. She's like, this is the best soup. Yeah, it's whiskey.
Basically, the episode is mom brings her home. We meet the family. And essentially, she's there for a rite of passage that has to happen to bring darkness or bring light or whatever it is that they're going to do.
Lucy's betraying her.
Yes.
Except for that they lock him in a jar because they're like, yeah, we don't want you out running around right now.
Lucy's not betraying her.
Right.
Right. They tell her that. Yeah. And, of course, Elfo is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, she finds Lucy, sets Lucy free. He's like, hey, they're setting you up to kill you. They're going to put this crown on your head and screw it into your brain and give you, you know, which is what they did to the brain damage guy.
Yep.
And this is supposed to fulfill this prophecy of bringing darkness and this and that. They managed to talk to this flame that knows all and talk to Elfo. He can't hear them very good because the reception is bad.
Reception.
And so Lucy tells him to go to hell. And he's like, oh, I heard that.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, no, not like I hate you go to hell, but like go to actual hell. I can get you out from there. And then they open the door to hell, and then there's fighting. Lucy gets thrown down, and then eventually the daughter, or I can't think of her name. the lead girl.
Oh, shoot. Now all I can think of is Meg. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, she is basically, they're going to go to hell now.
Yep.
To find, try to find Elfo. And she's got to try to find Lucy.
Bean. Tia Beanie.
Tia Beanie.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines was, she's like, oh, I don't know if I can fall asleep. It's a big castle and I'm not used to this place. I'm a little scared. And her mother goes, this is what I used to do when you were a baby. And she starts rubbing her forehead and goes, shut up. Shut up.
She's a bad mom.
Yeah. She's a terrible mom. She's self-absorbed.
Yeah. But yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
I will say real quick, as far as returning shows, I watched the Adam Ruins Everything About Little Bugs.
Nice. And?
I'm going to go real quick. I took a lot of notes, but a lot of them were just like little factoids. But it says the average home has 61 different species of insects living in it at any time. Black widows and fungal spiders kill almost no people.
We're all scared of them.
A black widow actually hasn't killed a person since 1993. Fungal spiders haven't killed anyone since 1981. Black widows usually kill their mates. That's why they're called black widows.
Makes sense.
The brown recluse, which most people think is where they get spider bites from, says brown recluse bites actually turned out to be other insect bites in the majority of 600 people they studied, and in some of them it was herpes.
Gross.
In the U.S., only 7 people die of spiders every year. Cows kill 20, dogs 28, deer up to 150,
which we discussed
last week. Spider's venom has thousands of unknown compounds. We still don't know what they are. Spiders eat bugs and they're saving humanity. We couldn't maintain current crop levels without spiders because they basically are natural insecticides. Let's see. Most foods have bugs in them, including canned goods and fresh veggies. The only reason the FDA puts limits on the amount of bug parts allowed in foods is so that people won't notice them. They know they're there. They just don't want you to see them. These parts are not only safe, they're actually good for you in many cases. Some hops in beer are 5% bugs. The red dye found in milkshakes, yogurt, and sausage is often from scale insects. That's where they get the dye from. Lac bugs themselves are crushed up and they're used in the coating of jelly beans and other candies and cake fondant.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah.
Well, it's edible. It's gross.
They were talking about meat-based versus insect-based. They said meat-based protein is growing worldwide massively. It would require more land than is available. 80% of a cricket is edible versus 40% of a cow is edible. It's kind of interesting. Bugs are safer to consume, have incredible nutritional value, and don't spread disease like most meat products do. Mm. You don't hear about mad cricket disease.
Correct.
Western culture is almost exclusively anti-bug versus the rest of the world, which eats a lot of bugs. This was interesting. Caterpillars turning into a butterfly is not beautiful. It's disgusting. They actually grow the cocoon around them. It's an exoskeleton. Right. And then they are dissolved inside by juices into a soup that then reforms different body parts, you know, like an eye here, an antenna here. So if you cracked one open, you'd probably get goop and then like maybe a few little body parts, and it would look disgusting until it actually reforms. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Our skin has thousands of demodex, which are tiny spiders that have sex at night and lay eggs. That's all they do. This is the especially fun part. They have no anus, so they hold in all their waste until they explode. Right now, there are thousands of little spiders on your face that are exploding because their poop got too much.
And do we get to see these in a microscope at all?
Yeah, they're very microscopic. Your guts are home to trillions of helpful microbes that break down stuff into vitamins and block viruses. They teach the immune system. The microbes in the colon process poop and keep harmful stuff out of the body. This is where they've actually gotten into fecal matter transplants, because these are people who take too many antibiotics and it kills off those biomes in their colon and such. So they actually put fecal matter into you to reintroduce those type of biomes so that you can have the helpful things that block out the waste and help fight diseases. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, they don't just, like, scoop a poop out of the toilet and feed it up in your butt. I can see the look on your face.
It's gross.
All of the microbes in your body make up 57% of the cells. And the human genome has 20,000 genes. Your microbiome, which is totally unique to you, may have upwards of 20 million. That's pretty impressive. That's what I got.
Exploding poop spiders.
That just have sex and lay eggs all night. So new stuff.
Okay. I apparently only watched three new shows, I guess.
One, two, three, four, five. Including a miniseries on Netflix. No, excluding. So six.
Okay.
But you also didn't have school written out, so maybe you forgot one.
I could have, yeah. Stumptown.
Yes.
Did you watch this?
I did.
Did you watch Stumptown, Emergence, and Prodigal Son?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I also watched Evil and the Unicorn, which are CBS, so that would be...
Right. The first trailer I saw for Evil, I thought, oh, that looks great. And then the second trailer I saw for, like, episode two, I thought, that looks fucking dumb.
Okay.
So I don't know. The Unicorn, funny?
Yeah, more touching than funny. Well, I mean, it definitely had some funny stuff. Rob Caudry is always funny, and his wife is hilarious. But, you know, it was touching as well. You know, the guy's struggling. He hasn't taken his wedding ring off in 20 years because that's the only woman he's had sex with for 20 years, and she just died last year, and now it's been 1 year. And he kind of has, like, in the preview they showed, you know, him digging through the chest freezer for all the food that people had brought over.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, how about brownies for dinner? And they're like, sure. And he kind of has this breakdown because in the opening scene, he's like, what about chicken parm? And they're like, who made it? And he's like, Mrs. Smith. And they're like, eh, pass. So he opens up the freezer one day, and all that's left is the chicken parm from Mrs. Smith. And it kind of makes him snap a little bit. And he's like, oh, my God. Like, it's over. Like, this really happened. I really have to get back to life. I have to.
Yeah.
And then his daughter at one point, she's like, I mean, come on, Dad. We were having brownies for dinner. I'm 12, and even I thought that was excessive. But, yeah, it's good. I think it's going to be comedy, but also very touching.
Nice.
Yep.
Evil?
I'm not sold on it yet, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, the whole premise is, are these people possessed by demons or not? It's a very packed show. The main woman, there's so many mysteries going on. Like, it turns out that her and her husband used to climb mountains and guide people up mountains, and that was her passion in life, but she gave it up to have kids, and now she has four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's off still guiding people up mountains and sends her checks, you know, which her mother points out is not enough money. But also one of her daughters is like, somebody called up and said that if you don't pay the loans back, we're going to be homeless. And so she calls up and talks to some guy. She goes, oh, those are just my student loans. And she calls this guy and she's like, if you ever threaten my daughters again, I swear to God, I'll kill you. Blah, blah, blah. But it's very interesting. It's a lot darker. And as my sister said, it's, you didn't expect them to get away with this much on a network show. Like, this almost felt like CBS All Access, because she actually has these nightmares at night where this demon comes to visit her, and he's completely naked. He's all, his skin is all black, and his head almost looks like a Nosferatu kind of thing. Like, the first time he comes, he's like taunting her, and then she's like, you're not real. And he goes, oh yeah, well, if I wasn't real, could I do this? And he walks over in the corner and starts pissing on the floor. And then she wakes up from the nightmare, and her daughters come in. They're like, you were screaming. You know, you had a nightmare. And she sees that there's water on the floor. And she's like, what the hell? And she goes over and checks, and her window's open like 3 inches, and it's raining. So, oh, maybe it was water that came in. So then the next night, she writes on this piece of paper and then tapes it up on her ceiling. He comes back to visit her, and he's taunting her, talking about things that – she did in her role as a therapist. You know, he's like, I'm going to ask you 57 questions and you're going to answer them, just like she had said. And he's holding up her hand and he has a butcher's knife to it. And he's like, and if you get any of them wrong, he goes, there are no right or wrong answers, but if you get one wrong, I'm cutting off a finger. And he actually does at one point, like right there on the screen, he slices off her pinky finger and then starts like licking the blood, which is very interesting for just a regular CBS show.
Pretty graphic for a regular, regular network
but
show.
But it was cool because then she looks up and she sees the sign and it's all like blurry and wavy. And she goes, ah, I can't read the sign. She said the Wernicke Center of the brain is what interprets language, and it shuts off when you're asleep. So I know that I'm asleep and that I'm dreaming. And he's like, you really sure about that? She's like, yes. And then she wakes up and her hand's fine. But yeah, it's interesting. Very dark, very twisted.
I'm gonna go with.
I'll keep you informed.
Yeah, let me know. Because that is one show I kind of wanted to watch, but after watching the second trailer or the preview for episode two, I was like,
fully sold. Especially with the whole, like, I feel like they've got too many different mysteries going on here. Like, are these really student loans? Is her husband really away? Is he going to come back and have a demon? But they're doing that whole X-Files thing where it's like, was this guy really possessed? He knew all these details. Oh, but wait, it turns out that this other guy broke into her therapist's office and stole the notes from her session and gave them to this guy and said, hey, throw these factoids at her. It'll convince her that you're possessed and that you know things you're not supposed to. So it's got an X-Files vibe to it there.
Okay.
Anyway. So now we've got...
Stumptown.
Yes.
Stars Colby Smulders.
Yep.
As Dex, a Marine vet who's got some PTSD
issues. I was going to say Diane Stump.
Yeah. Who's got some PTSD issues.
And a special ed brother.
Yeah. He's got the Down syndrome.
Yep.
And she's got to take care of both of them, but she doesn't have any money. And she was also in Afghanistan where she worked in military intelligence, and she used to find people. That was the thing. And this police officer – no, sorry. Wrong story. So this police officer approaches her about helping them find someone, but that's at the end. Essentially, the show opens with these two guys in a car driving down the road in this – in the what's it called? Sweet Caroline comes on the radio from a tape, and they're singing it. And then someone from, like, the trunk sprays the fire extinguisher through the seats, and it's Colby Smulders, and she comes out. She starts fighting both of them, and they drive up the back of, like, a ramp truck that's pointed up conveniently and flying through the air. And then we get the opening credits, and then we get, like, 72 hours earlier.
Which, I'm going to be honest, they almost lost me right there, because I hate that.
Me too.
And then for them to be like, this is our pilot episode, and we're going to do that. I'm like, fuck you guys.
Yep. But basically what it is, she was at she has a connection with the Nanine Casino, or the reservation there. Mm-hmm. And basically the guy that she loved was from the tribe, and he wanted to marry her, but he was forbidden to because of she's white, he's Indian.
Yep.
Or native, whatever. He marries someone else, they have a kid. Or she...
I think he had the kid before because she knew that.
Yeah.
Like, the kid knew that. She was like, yeah, I don't want the same thing to happen to me and him as what happened to you and my dad.
Right. Or she knows the story of what happened to her dad. But regardless, so he has a kid with someone else, maybe, who knows. She goes off to the military. He joins up with the military and then goes to visit her where she's stationed while he's supposed to be on leave when he doesn't go home and says he goes to visit her. And he gets killed in, like, an IED explosion. And the personal effects they found on him was an engagement ring because he was going to propose to her. But now he's dead. Mm-hmm. That haunts her.
Yep.
That's part of her issue. So she's got some alcohol issues. She's got some gambling issues. And so this guy, her ex-boyfriend there, her daughter is kidnapped by someone. Mm-hmm. And the tribe leader there, her ex-boyfriend's mother, goes to her and says, we need you to, Sulin Blackbird's her name on the show. We need you to go find... I need you to go find my granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And Dex doesn't do it at first, but she owes him like $11,000. And then she decides she'll do it to help. So throughout the course of the investigation, basically what we find out is that she's been kidnapped by somebody because of a bad deal between the casino and these drug people. Mm-hmm. And so the alleged boyfriend that loves her, the victim there, mm-hmm. is in on the kidnapping. So she gets kidnapped, gets held for ransom. Dex goes and finds her and is bringing her back when she's then attacked by these two guys.
Well, it was interesting because she goes to find her and can't find her.
She goes and finds one of her friends.
It was weird. It was a confusing kind of thing.
She goes in to speak to one of her friends, and her friend's like, yeah, I don't know where she is. I haven't heard from her. Okay, so Dex leaves, but then you see the friend, like, call her on the phone. So you see Dex running across the yard behind her, takes the phone from her.
Which was funny as hell.
Sees that there's messages and this and that and everything, and then tracks her down that way.
Right. That's where I was getting confused. So she does track the girl down and is taking her back and then gets run off the road by those two guys.
Yes.
They leave her there and take the girl.
And that's when the police then come into play.
Yep.
And this detective, Hoffman... And Lieutenant Cosgrove.
Yep.
of course, Lieutenant's like, maybe if you'd have left it up to the professionals, this wouldn't have happened because they obviously tracked you there. No, they were there the whole time because the boyfriend was in on it.
Yep.
So Hoffman, Detective Hoffman there, what's his name? The actor.
I don't remember. But he was in the one about the androids.
Michael Ealy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it? Almost Human?
Yeah. Yes, he was an Almost Human.
Yeah, he was the android.
Yeah. So anyways,
he seems to know her because he's like feeding her info and talking to her and stuff like that.
I don't think so. I think he knows that she's trying to help.
Okay.
And you have the fact that there's the reservations involved. Mm-hmm. So there's certain things.
And the reservation basically tells the cops, they're like, you're here at our discretion.
Yeah.
Because you have no jurisdiction over our stuff.
And so basically they lie and say that the girl's been returned when she hasn't, and Dex finds out that they were lying and then tracks them down, and that's when we get to this scene.
Yep.
And then she ends up beating them both up, throwing them in the trunk, and then going and rescuing the girl and stopping everything, and the police show up and on and on and on. Yep. And then at the end, Hoffman's then goes to her and says, hey, you know, there's basically people that need help that we can't help, but maybe you can help them. Yeah, maybe you can help them. So she basically becomes a private investigator.
Unlicensed, I'm assuming.
I don't know. But she basically becomes a private investigator. So it's like, and then the other characters is her brother, who she has to take care of, this guy Down syndrome, but he's in his 20s, I bet. And then her friend, Gray, who owns a bar and is like the only one that tells her the truth and how it is. And he likes her brother, and her brother works there. It's Jake Johnson. Yeah. I like him a lot.
He plays a great straight guy.
Yeah.
He was great on New Girl. He was great in Let's Be Cops. Phenomenal as Peter Parker in Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. So I like the show. What about you?
I do. I like the show. It's definitely not my favorite new show.
No, not mine either, but I will watch. I will absolutely watch episode 2.
Yeah. Did you realize the rookie comes back tonight?
Yeah, at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I'll be in bit. But
It's on ABC, is it not?
So it'll be on Hulu.
I might get ABC on my antenna tonight. It depends on the wind.
Yeah.
If it comes in or not.
We may be done recording by then.
We probably will be. It's 9 o'clock now. Prodigal Son, did you watch that?
I did.
Okay. What did you think?
I had two different thoughts on this. Okay, I was in two camps. On the one hand, some of it was kind of over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of ridiculous. His character is really over the top.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I fucking loved it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I can't wait to see more of Michael Sheen, because the last thing I saw Michael Sheen in was Good Omens, and he was an angel.
Michael Sheen has got, with his beard and mustache and crazy eyes, mm-hmm. has like maniacal evil smile face down.
Doesn't he?
Where he is just creepy to look at.
And it was like a Hannibal Lecter kind of thing, because yes. everything was just, like you said, you know, the smile and the eyes, but just being like, hey, remember, you're my boy.
Yeah. Because basically the show, okay, so the show is about Malcolm Bright, and his dad is Dr. Martin Whitley, and Malcolm changed his name to distance himself from his father. Dr. Whitley there is the surgeon, a serial killer who killed like 23, 26 people, something like that.
Using a method that he was perfecting called the quartet.
Yeah, which was about how you torturing someone horrifically.
He wanted them to be killed, but feel everything, be unable to move, be unable to talk, but feel absolute pain, suffering, and horror.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. He didn't just want to kill them. He wanted them to be in complete fear and agony.
And Malcolm becomes a profiler through the FBI. And we learn throughout the course of the episode that he's the reason why his dad was caught.
Yes.
Because he found a body in a trunk and knew what his dad was doing and called the police.
Yep.
Is what it comes down to.
And that was an awesome scene.
Oh,
that was an amazing scene. With Lou Diamond Phillips as a beat cop showing up there.
Yeah.
He was preparing the tea, and he's like, yeah, the surgeon would always lace his tea with ketamine
yeah.
to drug his victims. And how the kid walked up to him and, like, tugged on his sleeve and was like, you should get your gun out. My dad's going to try to kill you.
Yeah.
Wow.
That, yeah. And then he's,
but again, that's over the top.
Oh, yeah. He's like, well, what do you mean, kid? He's like, well, he poisons all his victims with tea before he kills them.
Yeah. And we've got Michael Sheen in there with that maniacal smile.
He looks at him as he's stirring the tea, smiling at him. Yeah. And basically what it is Malcolm Bright. I know.
A few more is this?
A little tired right now.
I love that you're on the same schedule as me now, so you get it.
Yeah.
You're getting the solid nights of sleep, but yeah. Then, like, this time of night, you're like, it's time to wind down, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So he's a profile with the FBI, and the opening case is, it goes clustery, let's just say the least. And he gets fired.
Yeah.
Because he went rogue and this and that, but he didn't really.
He also got fucked up.
Yeah, he got beat up pretty bad by this killer.
He got tasered.
Yeah.
But he was talking to the guy, and he was making some progress, because the guy seemed like he was a bit simple. I mean, he'd been raised essentially as a ward of the state, working at a slaughterhouse, and that's where he was taking his victims. Mm-hmm. And he got him talking, and then all of a sudden, just as he was putting his gun down, boom, got blown away. I love how the other cop, too, was like, hey, I got him, come in here.
I saved your life. He's like, no, you didn't. He punches him in the face. And so they basically, if
he goes, okay. Love his disciplinary thing. He goes, okay, so don't punch a sheriff. Kind of an unwritten rule. I get it. I won't do it again. They're like, no, it's written. There is a written rule about that.
Right. So Malcolm has two things going for him. One, he's absolutely brilliant as far as he can see things like no one else can when it comes to profiling, seeing where the serial killer sees. And then on the second, he is deathly afraid that he's going to turn into his father because he feels almost like, do I have these same sociopathic and psychopathic tendencies my dad did?
Well, we see during the episode that for many years until he went to college, he went and visited his dad. He was the only person
to learn about what his dad had to say and to try to learn from it.
Yep. And then he just stopped.
Yeah.
When he went off to college, he was like, no, I'm done. I'm not coming back anymore. And that's been bothering his dad. And that's kind of where the basis for their future endeavors together.
And he's also on a shit ton of meds.
Yes.
So he hasn't seen his dad in like a decade.
Yep.
And then the FBI, then he gets fired from the FBI and his mom seems real happy about it.
I loved her on Scrubs and I never watched her on Desperate Housewives, but I love her in this because she is playing the rich waspy mom who, you know, glosses right over all of it, you know, because, well, this will be a better opportunity for you. You can do something better with your life instead of this.
And his sister is a reporter.
Okay, I'm already going to make a prediction on this because she said in the first episode, she's like, I'm so glad that I was too young to know what was going on with Dad so it didn't affect me. She was 5 years old at the time. My prediction is that she's got it in her too, and we're going to see her go a little evil at some point. Because she's got the reporter thing. She's, you know, digging up the stories and trying to make a name for herself. She has.
But you're right. I bet you're right. Lou Diamond Phillips is a lieutenant with the NYPD.
Is this guy ever not good?
I love Lou Diamond Phillips, yeah.
Favorite role? I know most people would say Stand and Deliver, but some people might say Young Guns. For me, The Big Hit.
Oh, yeah. He was fantastic in that.
Oh, my God. I love that movie. That is a guilty pleasure movie that I can watch over and over and over again.
I think it's Young Guns for me.
Really?
Yeah.
He was phenomenal in Young. And you're talking the original, not the second one.
I like them both.
They were really good.
I like him in both.
Second one had the most phenomenal soundtrack.
Okay, so in the Young Guns, it might be Young Guns 2, but he gets in the knife fight with a guy and the guy stabs him through the arm. That's the Young Guns 2, because it's Christian Slater's character. Mm-hmm. And and when Lou Diamond Phillips doesn't react to getting stabbed through the arm, just dead stares him down. He like freaks the hell out of him. And then, you know, Emilio Estevez breaks it up and everything. And he just looks at him and goes, you want your knife back?
Yeah.
It's badass.
It is.
So anyways, Lou Diamond Phillips, lieutenant of the NYPD, he's one that calls Malcolm Bright and says, hey, you need to come look into this for us. We need your help.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. And of course we meet his team. Lou Diamond Phillips' team, of course, they immediately, like, the one guy rubs, and Bright, they rub each other the wrong way. But it's because the guy says some stupid shit, and Bright calls him out on it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I wish I could remember now what it was, but it was just, like...
And then you've got it was completely stupid.
Yeah, but he's like, oh, how many corpses have you had sex with? Or something like that.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. it was something along the lines of like, you know, oh yeah, this one's dead and cold and, you know, dressed up like a prom queen or something like that. Yeah, just my type. And oh, so you're a necrophiliac.
Yes, that's right. Oh, so you're in a necrophilia. Yeah. And then there's the other detective who, the woman there, she is the one that...
She's the one that's like the intense, over the top, you know, trying to make a name for herself kind.
Right. But at the same time, she's trust bright or respects his intelligence that he displays.
Well, she's the first one that finds out his secret because she gets knocked down by the guy when they discover who he was, which, again, was kind of cool, you know.
Right. Because
he had stolen pages out of the surgeon's.
Right.
Book while he was surgically operating on him, which I still want them to explain that. You know,
okay, well,
this guy's a serial killer, and he was allowed to operate on this guy?
Well, okay, so when... Because it's a copycat killer, he goes to visit his dad to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
And he has this really nice plush place he's living in, and his cage... It's
still prison.
It's still prison, but it's really nice, and he's got... Yeah.
He's got a cable that attaches cuffs to the wall, so he can only go so far.
But he's got bookshelves, you know, floor to ceiling. He's got all kinds of things, and he's still allowed to see patients and operate on people because, as the wording goes, or he says something along the lines of, like, well, you know, Saudi princes, they don't mind them just who I am,
whatever it just seems weird, though, that that he would be allowed to have sharp instruments.
Yeah, it does seem odd, but essentially he's still operating on people for some reason. And one of his patients allegedly stole stuff out of his book, but how could he have stole stuff out of his book?
Right.
So anyways, it seems weird that an active serial killer is still also a working doctor with patients and stuff.
Yeah.
Because his doctoring wasn't just being a surgeon. His doctoring was also he was a therapist, or he was a psychotherapist as well. It's almost like people pay him to do things because they, I don't know.
Right.
They can, and other people won't pay him. I don't know. It doesn't matter at this point. I'm sure they'll explain, or they'll just hopefully gloss over it. But anyways, so of course he has to have contact now with his dad for the first time in 10 years. And he doesn't call him dad. He calls him Dr. Whitley the whole time. And... When the copycat is trying to kill that detective and then Malcolm jumps in, I mean, yeah, to save him and everything, that's when he reveals that, oh, I'm the surgeon's son. What better victim could you have?
And then, I deserve your wrath more than your wife does.
Right. And then Lou Diamond Phillips kills the guy and then this and that and everything. And she's like, were you really going to inject yourself with that? And he's like, oh, no, of course not. No.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy. I was just trying to distract him. Yeah. But I think he was going to.
Yeah.
And then that's when Lou Diamond Phillips tells the story of who he is and why he has an affinity for Malcolm. Because Malcolm saved his life, and also that's how he made the bust of arresting the surgeon.
And saved all those other lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's over the top. Like, they go to find who they think is the guy, and it turns out that the guy that they think was the guy, the real killer... kidnapped this guy.
And forced him to make calls, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
So he was using his identity and strapped him to a chair with a bomb, tied him down there. And so Malcolm gets an axe and chops the guy's hand off. He's like, don't worry, we can save it. You know, they do great things with reattachment surgeries, and chops the guy's hand off with a bucket. You know, or he has a cooler
with ice in it, yeah.
And he actually literally comes out and says, I got to go give him a hand.
Yeah.
So it's over the top ridiculous in some of this stuff, but honestly, at this point, this is my favorite show of the season. This is my favorite show of the new shows that have come out.
I believe Frank Hartz is Detective TJ Tarmel or whatever, and that's the guy that has the issues with him. He's the necrophilia guy. And when I think it's hilarious when Malcolm says, go get some ice in a cooler or something like that, and he's like, okay, and he runs out.
Yeah. Yep, this was the show that I enjoyed the most, the one that I'm looking forward to watching more episodes of, and I think a lot of that is Michael Sheen. The guy who plays his son is a phenomenal actor, too.
Yes.
Like, he's doing the over-the-top crazy but, you know, really brilliant thing quite well. And he's not a regular household name. Like, I've never seen this guy in other stuff that I can think of.
No,
Which I like.
Yeah, I like that as well.
And I think something's going to be up with his sister. And we're going to find out.
I didn't think about that. It hadn't crossed my mind, but now that you've said that, it does make me think that, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. and he'll end up hunting her down at some point, or realizing that the person he's been hunting was her.
So the next new show I watched was Emergence.
Yes.
And it stars Alison Tolman as Jo Evans.
Gotta love her.
Newly divorced police chief and mother to a teenage daughter.
Daughter to Clancy Brown,
yeah.
A.K.A. Mr. Krabs, A.K.A. the Kurgan.
Yeah. Also, ex-husband is Donald Faison.
Which is weird.
It does seem weird. I don't think they'd ever get married. Like, I don't see the two of them like, yeah, they were a couple.
No.
Yeah.
It's not, always be Turk to
me. It's not a black and white thing. It's a personality thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's even in the show, like, his personality is way off hers.
He's just, I'm Chris Turk. So basically, this takes place on Long Island, New York. I thought it took place in the Pacific Northwest when the show started, but apparently it's Long Island.
Okay.
And essentially what it is there's a plane crash, and the chief gets woken up from it, and it somehow affected electricity and blacked out the towns and this and that. She goes to check it out, finds a girl, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, whatever it is, and she takes her to the hospital. And then some men showing up to be – these people show up to say they're the NTSB.
Yep.
And the NTSB showed up at the beach, which is like the National basically
Transport Safety Bureau.
Yeah, if you have like a commercial plane crash,
yep.
They show up to investigate what's wrong because they are not Homeland Security. They're not FAA. They are an independent government agency. And when the agents want to talk to the girl – and they won't tell him no. He threatens to arrest. Oh, you'll be in prison now, to the orderly at the hospital. And to which the sheriff is like, you don't have arrest powers. I don't know who you think you are.
Exactly.
But I do. So let's go down the hall and talk and be calm about
NTSB.
This.
NTSB.
Yeah. But of course they disappear. And she ends up taking.
And the real NTSB called and said, we don't know who they are.
Exactly. And then she ends up taking the girl to her house. And then the next day, of course, leaves her there with her dad, who is a firefighter who has cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about this little girl. She's strange. She's different. She's got powers. Maybe she doesn't have powers. She can make the TV do funny things. These two people show up at the police station saying that they're her mother. And very easily, the chief susses them out that they're not. And there's like a power surge, and then they disappear.
She, like, they had passports and everything. She's like, oh, so what were you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we're camping. She's like, wow, this time of year, on a school week? She must be a lucky girl, huh?
Yeah.
And then something, their phone goes off, and she goes, oh, is that the new phone? I've been thinking about getting a new one. Can I see? I'd love to see what it's like because, you know, I'm sure that your phone's like mine. You know, I've only got one kid, and my phone's just filled with pictures of her. Can you show me pictures of your daughter? And they're just like,
we've
answered your questions.
Yeah, we provided you documentation. Go bring her to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she offers them coffee, which they take. And then, of course, she takes their cups to go freshen them up and apologize and this and that. And run these fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Which my wife watched this show with me. And as soon as they give coffee, she's like, oh, she wants their fingerprints.
Yep.
You know. And then there's a flickering of the lights and there's a power surge and the people are gone.
Yep.
They disappear. Not in front of her eyes. She runs back to her office and they're gone.
Great.
And then she kind of gets freaked out. She calls her ex-husband, Donald Faison, and is like, go get the kids. Go get my dad. Go get Piper. Go to the place where we set the living room on fire and don't tell anyone about it.
Yep.
And he heads to their oceanfront home, which it's obviously a cold time of year.
Right.
She shows up there and almost immediately there's people there breaking into the house, yada, yada. And while they're trying to escape, they grab the girl. And while the vehicle's driving down the road, she's chasing them. And then the vehicle all of a sudden looks like it hits an invisible wall.
Which was one of the trailers for this show.
And then the man and woman inside are dead, and they are the fake parents.
Yep.
And the girl climbs out, and there's not a scratch on her.
Yeah.
So
so up until this point, it's weird.
Yeah. And the people there that are now dead, they've had no fingerprints. Their DNA is not on file, no nothing. So the sheriff there, Joe Evans there, she decides that she's going to keep custody of Piper, which is what they've named her, rather than put her in their system. And she goes to the one beat cop or whatever that she seems to trust or saw the little girl as well. And she basically is like, look, I'm going to do something illegal and I'm not going to put this girl in the system because there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that was like, yeah, there is something wrong here. There's something really fishy going on.
Yep.
She's like, yeah, absolutely. So I need to now ask you to lie and say that you never saw her. You don't know anything about this. And he's like, yeah, no problem.
Yep.
So I like that we have that aspect and we're not dealing with the, oh, come on, chief. We got to do things the right way type of thing, you know.
So, now, she also met a guy played by Owen Yemin, who was Rigsby in The Mentalist, and I love him. And he kind of came up to her and was not trying to get the girl back, but basically said, you need to watch yourself.
I don't even know if he knows about the girl.
He told her that that there are going to be people that will come around, and they're going to tell her that it wasn't a plane that crashed, that it was a drone, and it was doing something. Like, he knew the cover-up story that they were going to use, and then they used that exact cover-up story.
Yes.
And so she goes and meets with him later, and she's like, all right, we need to talk.
Everything in my world says I shouldn't trust him. He goes, oh, yeah, you shouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm going to. Yeah, you kind of have to. But he doesn't seem to know about the girl, but he knows about the plane crash.
Yep.
He knows that there's going to be a cover-up about it. He knows that he seems to know quite a bit.
Yep, and he knows the exact story that they're going to use and that they do use.
And so Piper, then, that the last kind of thing we see is that she takes a box cutter and cuts her neck open.
Yeah. Which was interesting because she's been in that crash of the plane, allegedly, and then the crash of the car and didn't have a scratch on her, but she can cut herself open.
Maybe. I think she healed like that after, too.
I think so.
But she pulled out something out of her neck, this little device
behind her ear.
Yeah, and it had it was like electronic and it had a symbol on it.
Yep.
And earlier, she saw the same symbol on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the TV was kind of glitching out and everything, and she flushed it down the drain or whatever. And So it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Like, she knew exactly where it was in her neck.
Yeah.
And just very calmly, there wasn't, like, any pain on her face or anything. She just very calmly cut her neck, reached up in there, pulled it out, kind of looked at it, studied it for a bit. It was glowing yellow.
Yeah.
And then she just dropped it in the sink and watched it go down the drain. Interesting.
So I'm intrigued. I enjoyed it thoroughly. My wife liked the show.
They said in an interview that they're going to the mystery will be there, but that they're not going to keep us guessing for the whole season. Like, they're going to give us answers, which I appreciate.
So I'm curious to see what else is going to happen, but mostly I'm a big fan of the lead, and that helps.
Yep.
So I didn't watch any other shows I can think of. You?
I watched one, and I'm not going to go into detail about it because I think you should watch it. I think everyone should watch
Criminal?
Yes. No, it's not.
Okay.
I want to see that.
Okay.
I haven't watched any of that
yet. What's
this? This was a show on Netflix called Unbelievable.
Yes, Kate and I plan on watching that.
Okay. Then
thoroughly.
And I'm not going to say anything. What I will give you is the quick synopsis,
which
is that you remember we just watched Booksmart the other day?
Yeah.
The nerdier of the two.
Yes. I think I talked about it in the trailer.
Yep. She reports a rape. That she was raped.
Yeah.
The police investigated. They find some inconsistencies in her story. Basically, they can't find any proof that it happened. So she recants it. This is all in the first episode. So she recants it. She says, no, it didn't happen. Then she says, yes, it did. Then she says, no, it didn't. All in the first episode. And then we see over the next six episodes, because I think it's seven, over the next six episodes, we see other people investigating similar rapes in different parts of the country and collaborating. And meanwhile, we keep going back to her and what's going on in her life. So it's like two different stories. It was phenomenal. It's dark.
Okay.
It's definitely something.
Yeah, I saw there was a disclaimer at the beginning that they popped up, which was because I watched the beginning of it and I was like, I'm going to hold off and see if Kate wants to watch this.
I do not recommend if you're in like a down state watching this or if you're feeling like, boy, this world sucks watching this because it's not a suicidal kind of thing. It reminds you that the world kind of sucks sometimes.
It does.
And what these people go through is really shitty. But I really think that it was phenomenal. Like, I watched all seven episodes and went, oh, I kind of want to vomit, but it was really good. So, yeah.
Cool.
Watch it. Let me know afterwards.
Okay.
And that's all the shows that I watched.
Watch any trailers? Did you watch any movies?
I did. I watched both.
I got a couple trailers. I got a movie. I got a little bit of news.
Okay.
The one movie I watched was Dark Phoenix.
That's the only one they watched?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Was it as bad as they said?
So, Yeah, it wasn't that good. Like, it was so not good compared to the others.
Yeah.
It was really, like, it's kind of like after Fox saw the movie, why'd they go, oh, we should definitely release this. You know, I don't know, it's just...
I don't think they did. I think they kept pushing it back because they were like, I don't want to release this. When Disney bought them, they were like, push it out.
I mean, the other movies, like, you know, X-Men First Class and Days of Future Past, those were all excellent movies. Great. You know, and we have a lot of the same characters, but this thing is...
Apocalypse kind of went downhill, though.
Yeah, but okay, so Jean Grey's character. This version of Jean Grey.
Yep.
Maybe I missed it in one of the other movies, but as far as I'm concerned, this person has done nothing to gain my favor or sympathy or hatred or anything. Like, nothing the character.
Yeah.
I know the history of Jean Grey, but this version really hasn't been a focal point because...
We only had her in Apocalypse.
Professor X was the focal point. Magneto, their wars. Wolverine, other characters... You know, but we got her in Apocalypse, but we didn't really. And now all of a sudden, in this movie, and Jennifer Lawrence's character, Raven, Mystique was a main character, and Beast, Hank, and you know, all these characters were main characters. And now in this movie, all of a sudden, she's gonna be the focal point, where you know they go to space, she absorbs the Phoenix, it's alien apparently in nature, and we're supposed to care about her. There's nothing that makes us care about her.
Not to mention the fact, and this may be an unpopular opinion, but I personally find Sophie Turner very unlikable anyway. Like, not that I hate her, but I kind of nothing her as well.
Okay.
Like,
I know you do.
I feel that she's just like a whatever, you know?
They didn't do anything for me to establish why I should care about this character one way or another. And, you know, okay, so... Yeah. She gets this power. She doesn't know how to control it. I mean, we get to see Dazzler in this movie, at least. That's kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. But she accidentally kills Mystique.
Which they told us before they even aired the first trailer.
Right, yeah. She accidentally kills Mystique. And then she goes to Magneto for help. But then, of course, the military shows up immediately to get her. And then she won't tell Magneto whose blood is on her shirt. And... then Magneto finds out now he wants her dead, and so we get the little there's some good action,
mm-hmm.
But there's nothing about the character that made me sympathetic towards her, made me care about her, made me feel bad for her, made me anything, and yet she's the star of the movie, mm-hmm. And her journey through the movie is she tries to save some people, she gets possessed by this alien thing power that makes her remember memories of the professor. Tried to hide from her because she accidentally killed her mom and via a car wreck with her mom and dad, and she thought her dad was dead, but he was alive, and he gave her up and didn't want anything to do with her. She goes to find her dad. That doesn't go well, obviously. And then everyone's against her, and then these alien beings come to get the power from her, but they tried to make her, like, whatever. And then we're supposed to care, and then in the end she sacrifices herself after she stops all these aliens. And again, we're supposed to care, but I don't. That's the thing. There was no emotional attachment to her, to her character, to her sacrifice, to her plight, to what she did, to anything at all. Even if I were to remove myself from knowing, if I watch this as a standalone film.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so like Venom, it differs greatly from the comic books. But if you ignore all the comic book history, Venom's a great film.
Yeah.
This movie... I don't remember the Dark Phoenix story because we've heard it. We've seen it already in the theaters with the original X-Men run, which these movies are connected. So we shouldn't be seeing it again.
Right.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, all these X-Men are connected. We saw an older Jean Grey as Dark Phoenix and alive.
Mm-hmm.
We saw her alive in Apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
but now she's dead. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's the assumption because she sacrificed herself. But regardless, so I don't know if they're trying to draw off those feelings from people. But that's too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have never watched those movies. I say most. We have. We're 40s.
Yeah.
People that are in their 20s probably haven't watched those movies, but they're familiar with these.
Yep.
So you just have a character that you have no emotional attachment to, that you don't care. Now, if this was Mystique's plight and she got the Phoenix and all that other stuff, yeah, you're emotionally attached to her.
Right.
Because of all the other movies that you just watched and established it. You're not the Jean Grey. You just don't care.
Right.
And then the movie's over and...
When the original Dark Phoenix storyline came out, people were attached because Jean Grey was one of the original X-Men.
We'd already seen her in a couple of movies, or at least...
Oh, I was talking comics.
Oh, the comics, yes. Yeah. Absolutely the comics, yeah.
You know, this was somebody who was established as one of the first mutants.
Yeah.
One of the first X-Men. You know, people knew who she was. They had grown attached to her. So it was a compelling story.
Right.
But, yeah, like, if this character doesn't... Yeah.
Like, you're, I mean, Jean Grey was an Apocalypse, but she was a background character.
Yeah, until the very end when she, like, stopped him and, you know... had some fire coming out around her, and everyone went, oh, they're foretelling that, you know.
Right, but then they don't establish her backstory, her character, or anything.
No.
They try in this movie.
Because Apocalypse was about Apocalypse.
Right. It's just, yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I've watched all the Marvel movies. Now I've watched this one. Yeah. What movies did you watch?
I watched three of them.
Yep.
I went to the theaters and watched Hustlers.
How was that?
It was actually really good. It's based on a true story.
Yep.
Strippers who were working in a very high-end club that was frequented by Wall Street guys.
Nice.
Back in 2007. You know, it starts in 2007. 2008, the stock market crash, and all these guys, their money dried up. So the strip club dried up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And watching, you know, mostly it focuses on Constance Wu's character.
Yep.
And, you know, how she got pregnant at one point and had a baby and kind of got out of it. And then she didn't have any marketable skills. You know, she's trying to apply for a retail job and they're like, you don't have any retail experience. She's like, well, how can I get it if I don't have it? And so
how do you get credit if you don't have credit?
Yeah, exactly. So it was the women from the club kind of said, a few of them, not all of them, but a few of them, including Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu, were like, well, we still have contacts of some of these guys. You know, let's invite them out and get them drunk. Oh, let's mix up this thing of ketamine and MDMA and get them so that they're feeling good, but also completely out of it. And they can just keep running up their credit cards and we'll take them for every penny that they have. And they did that. It was actually really well done. They did a lot of film stuff that I really liked. Early on, you see that Constance Wu is talking to Julia Stiles, who's a reporter.
Yeah.
And while they're talking, she keeps looking down and there's a recorder on the table and it's recording them. You know, every time she's asked a tough question, she kind of looks at it. And then later on in the movie, they reach a point where Julia Stiles asks her something and she just reaches down and turns off the recorder and all the sound goes out of the movie. And you see their lips moving and they're obviously talking, but you don't hear any of it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I've always appreciated that kind of stuff. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Cool.
And then I watched, because they were on HBO, I watched the second Lego movie.
Yep.
I enjoyed it. It was much the same as the first one, except for whereas the first one was the little kid and, you know, dad has all these cool toys and never had time for him and stuff. This one was about siblings growing up because, you know, at the very end of the first movie, his sister is invited to play and she's Duplo Blocks. And they picked that up right there. But as you learn, as you go throughout the movie, it's been a few years and they're older and, you know, the son is kind of growing up and doesn't want to hang out with his sister anymore, and she misses him. And so, you know, it's about family and things like that. It was good.
Okay.
And then the other one was Isn't It Romantic? Which, this is the one with Rebel Wilson where she gets mugged and clangs her head and wakes up inside a romantic comedy.
Yes.
It's fucking hilarious.
I'm sure it is.
It was a riot. I recommend this as a date night movie.
Yeah.
It's funny because she comments on different things, you know, like the fact that it's a PG movie. So every time she tries to swear, things like a truck backs up and, you know, you can't hear anything. People spontaneously break out into musical numbers. How do they all know the choreography? You're way too handsome to be a doctor. You know, it's just all the things that are absolutely cliche. And Adam Devine's in it, and it's awesome.
Oh, you never actually see sex in a PG movie. It's implied, and they wake up the next morning.
She's like, jump into bed. And he's like, okay. And he takes off the towel and jumps on her. And then suddenly it cuts right back to the same, like Groundhog Day, basically.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
She's like, all right, so apparently I can't have sex. But she saw his penis, and she talks about that. She's got the best friend who is the overly gay stereotype. Nice. I mean, like, absolutely over the top because that's always a thing. And, you know, Adam Devine saves the life of Priyanka Chopra, who is, you know, just drop-dead gorgeous. She's a yoga ambassador. Rebel Wilson says to her at one point, ambassadors are for countries, not for yoga. That's an activity. Yeah, I really recommend this movie. It was fun. It was funny. And it's a good date night movie.
Nice.
So it's on HBO right now.
So I didn't make it with you because I was too tired when I got back from Canada. But didn't you just go to Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Yes, I went to Mystery Science Theater 3000, Circus of Horror. This was Joel's farewell tour.
Yeah.
So it was only Joel, and he had a couple of cast members. Jonah was not here.
Yeah.
This was cheesy. And I don't know if it was cheesy because they were like, well, it's just Joel, so, you know, yeah, we're not going to put a big budget into it. Or if it was cheesy because Joel's the guy that created this. You know,
yeah,
he started this whole thing, and so maybe they were trying to go retro. Super cheesy. Like, because last time when we went,
yeah,
they had the game show, and they had all the monitors and everything.
Yeah.
And this one, they had, like, they almost had like a puppet theater type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you could see people walking behind the curtain constantly. Like it was a curtain behind a curtain.
Yeah.
And you could see people walking there and everything was just super cheesy. And I loved it. I couldn't have loved it more.
Good, absolutely.
Like they didn't even remember how when we went down, they did the thing where the robots and Joel and Jonah would go off stage and then you'd see the silhouettes like always. They didn't even do that with this one. You just saw the movie projected and you saw them sitting over on the side of the stage.
Okay.
Like they had a table and they would just sit there at the table. But Joel, like when he came out, he had an electric guitar and he started playing. He was singing the theme song.
Oh, nice.
And he stopped at first and he's like, I never played the guitar. They just taught me this so that I could do this thing. Hold on a second. He's like playing the chords. And then he did the, you know, the la, 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 la parts from the theme song. And so he got the audience singing along. And then at one point they all did it. And he goes, no, it's not there. That's not there. That's the na-na-na-na-na part. You guys said la, la, la. It's na-na-na. And then like he'd do it again and build them up. And they go la, la, la. And he's like, no. And he did it like four or five times. And he goes, you guys are fucking with me, aren't you? And then later on, he came out in a suit, and he said that he actually started off as a ventriloquist back in the day. He wanted to be a ventriloquist, and he's like, and I created this thing, the vent mask, and he brought an audience member up on stage and strapped it to her, and it looked like a ventriloquist dummy's face, but he strapped it to her so he could sit there and press this little button, and it made the mouth go up and down like a ventriloquist dummy, but the woman was a live person.
Yeah.
So it was really funny the way that that worked out.
That's cool.
But yeah, the movie was horrible, horrible. Oh my God.
Like not enjoyable, horrible, or?
I never would have watched even 5 seconds of this movie.
Oh wow.
If it wasn't for them.
Because like the movie we watched last year was like, it was stupid, but great kind of.
This one opens in the French countryside with these three people who all have thick German accents driving around in a convertible in winter, which they made sure to point out. And they meet this little girl who's like pumping a well on the side of the road. And she has like this horrible disfigurement on her face. And one of the guys is a doctor and he's like, oh, I could fix your face. And so he goes and tells her father, who owns a circus, hey, I could fix her face. And he's like, oh no, all the doctors said they couldn't. And he goes, well, I'm the best. And then he fixes her face. And the guy's like, oh, I'll give you anything if you can fix her face. And he does. He goes, okay, give me your circus, because he wants to hide out. And we find out that he is on the run because he butchered people and, you know, war crimes and stuff like that.
Okay.
It was just horrible. Like the guy signs over the circus to him, and then they go out and they're walking around the circus, and the guy's like drinking, like over the top kind of drinking, and dances with a bear, which is clearly a person in a bear suit.
Nice.
And throws the bottle of whiskey on the ground right near the bear, and the bear steps on it, cuts his paw, and so attacks and kills this guy. Again, a guy in a bear suit. It was horrible.
Nice.
And then every time somebody wants to leave the circus, this guy murders them, like straight up murder, arranges for accidents to happen, and they all die before they can leave the circus. So it was bad. But yeah, I enjoyed myself. Sorry you couldn't make it.
Yeah, I was exhausted.
Yeah, I'm glad you.
I was telling my wife, I was like, I really don't want to miss out, but I'm dead. I am dead. So
I watched a few trailers, but none of them I really cared about as much.
I watched two trailers. Letterkenny Season 7.
Okay.
Which apparently there's going to be a lot of hockey in it and shenanigans. They didn't actually tell us a lot. It just looks great.
Okay.
And I watched a trailer for a flick called 1917. Did you see this one?
Nope.
It's a British World War I flick.
That's why I didn't see it.
About two soldiers given an impossible mission to deliver a message about an ambush. And they have to trek across this countryside to give this message. And looks really good. Colin Firth's in it. Benedict Cumberbatch is in it. Hmm. I mean, it looks really good. It's a World War I flick, so. Hmm. What did you got for trailers?
I saw Like a Boss, which looks funny. It's Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne, our friends who start up a cosmetics little tiny thing, and then they get a buyout offer from Salma Hayek, and it's a comedy, and it looks really funny. Like, at one point, they say something about her having a little head, and Salma Hayek's like, no, my head's actually normal size. It's just that my breasts are absolutely gigantic. That's the kind of humor through most of it. So it looks funny.
Nice.
It's an HBO thing. I saw, actually, I guess three, because I saw a preview for a movie, and I didn't catch the name of it, so I just wrote down Edward Norton movie. But apparently it's called Motherless Brooklyn. It says, mm-hmm. set against the backdrop of 1950s New York, Motherless Brooklyn follows Lionel Esrog, a lonely private detective afflicted with Tourette's syndrome, as he ventures to solve the murder of his mentor and only friend, Frank Minna. Looks decent.
Okay. It's based on a novel.
Okay. And the last one that I watched was called Countdown. Have you seen this? You get an app on your phone and it tells you how long you have to live. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. I've read like a headline premise, but I didn't watch the trailer.
Yeah, basically it tells you, you know, you've got X number of years, months, days, hours, minutes to live.
Yeah.
And this one girl gets it and it says she's going to die in like a week or something like that. And then the people who, when their timer runs out, they seem to be dying. So it's got like a Final Destination kind of vibe to it.
Okay. News? Or are we on news? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give my first piece of news. My only piece of news, I have two pieces of news, but really this is the only one I messaged you about it. Ashley Scott, she played Helena Kyle, a.k.a. The Huntress, mm-hmm. on the 2002 CW TV series Birds of Prey.
Yeah, for
which
all
lasted
what?
For one season, 13 episodes.
Oh, they did get 13 episodes.
Yeah, yep. Well, I don't know if they aired all 13, but they filmed 13. Anyways, she is going to be putting on the Huntress uniform and coming back for the Crisis event.
That's awesome.
Last week we were discussing, well, what shows haven't they touched on yet? Could they do this? And Birds of Prey never even crossed my mind.
Me either.
Yeah. So that's pretty damn cool.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, they found a way to tie that one, which used to be on the CW.
Yep.
So that's even better, I think.
I agree.
And then I don't have that right in front of me, but was it Jeff Goldblum, Sam Neill, and the girl is
Laura
Dern. They're going to return for the next Jurassic World movie.
Yeah, which I didn't even watch the second one.
I didn't. I haven't watched it yet either. So,
yeah.
Okie dokie.
Glow is getting a fourth and final season.
Okay, yeah, I did see that, yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, it's kind of played.
The show didn't run that long, so. But I'm glad that they know it's their final season going in. I'm sure you saw this, but we had mentioned it before. Erica Durance is coming back as Lois Lane.
Oh, yes.
To Tom Welling's.
Yes.
Now, what's very interesting, and I don't know if you saw this, Michael Rosenbaum has come out and said that he will not be coming back.
I did not see that.
But I actually support him in this, because he said that what happened was he was down visiting his grandfather in the hospital.
Yeah.
And his agent called up and said, hey, they contacted me and they want you back for it. And he goes, oh, what are the details? He goes, none. He goes, what do you mean there are none? He goes, no, they wouldn't give us any details. They won't give you a script. You're not going to get paid, and they need an answer right now. And he said, oh, then no. Then my answer is no. I'm with my grandfather. He's sick. He's in the hospital. Thanks. And then he went on social media and said, this is why I did it. I just want you all to know. I know you've been saying you really wanted to see me. Where they said it's sight unseen and that they need an answer now.
They kind of have to pay him, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, so I support him for that.
Yeah, but they can always go back to him and say, okay, so this is what it is. Exactly. This is what's going on.
Exactly. Kind of like how one of my other pieces of news, now Spider-Man's back in the MCU.
Yeah, okay, I did read that. Yeah, well, okay. So then I've seen conflicting reports. One report was that he's back for a third movie.
Yes.
That's it. And then another report is like, no, he's back completely.
Nope. He is back for one more movie.
Yeah.
That's what they agreed on. What's very interesting is that Disney was getting 5% of the ticket sales.
Right. And they were keeping all merchandise.
Now, with this new deal, they're getting 25% of the ticket sales.
Yeah. I guess the big holdup was they wanted 50%.
That's still huge.
Oh, yeah.
It went from 5 to 25. That's a 500% increase.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting.
Well, maybe Sony's like, oh, we really can't do it without him. But then I also saw a bit where Spider-Man may be showing up in the next Venom movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he can.
Yeah.
Because Sony still retains the rights to put him in their stuff as well.
Yeah.
So don't know if it'll be Tom Holland, but that's cool, though, because as I was looking at it, and they said that we were going to get a trilogy.
Oh, and they gave a release date, July 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But they said we were going to get a trilogy. It was going to be Homecoming, Far From Home, and then a third. They were calling it originally the Homecoming trilogy.
Yeah.
And so now we will get that. So it'll be a little bit better than how we all just basically got done watching Far From Home, and they were like, oh, by the way, he won't be back. Like, that was a dick move.
So I'm wondering if, again, when they do this movie, are they going to finalize his story in the MCUs and say, all right,
possible.
Well, we're going to get rid of him now, or what they're going to do.
Or if they're going to open this up and say, let's share, you know, let's bring Venom into the MCU as well. Let's do a similar deal. Who knows?
Let's do everything. I mean,
because Sony just announced that, so they're already working on Venom 2 right now, and they've confirmed that Woody Harrelson will be back as Cletus Cassidy.
Yeah.
They have either wrapped production or they're close to on Morbius.
Yeah.
And now they've just announced that they're doing a Madam Web movie.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I'm kind of interested in that because I liked her as a character. She had some interesting storylines. So they're really, really pushing hard on making their own Spider-Man universe.
Cool.
This wasn't news, but I kind of wanted, since we were talking about Michael Rosenbaum and Erica Durance and everything, remember they had an Aquaman?
Yeah.
Okay. That was, he was also in Blood Drive. That was the main guy.
Okay, I was thinking of the Aquaman pilot that they did that had
Justin Hartley.
Justin Hartley who played Green Arrow.
Yeah, no, this guy showed up. I think I looked it up, and it was like 4 episodes of Smallville.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
So yeah, that was the main character on Blood Drive.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
That's kind of cool. Apparently, right now he is Hawk on Titans.
Yes, that I did know.
Wouldn't be that hard to bring him over.
Probably not.
Don't know if they bring him over as Aquaman or as Hawk, but just saying.
Well. Yeah, because he's playing a DC character right now on that.
On the DC network. Yeah. I won't get into all the details, but the Emmys were interesting this year.
Who was it that cleaned up? Was it
Amazon cleaned up?
Amazon cleaned up,
Netflix,
yeah.
And HBO.
Yeah.
And there were almost no Emmys for actual, like, ABC, NBC.
Right, networks, yeah. But, like, a couple of shows cleaned up. Like, on Amazon, it was, like, The Marvelous Maisel.
Fleabag.
Yeah, Fleabag did well.
And she's already said that there wouldn't be a third season,
yeah.
But they just signed her to a multi-year deal as a result of this.
Yeah.
So she's going to be exclusive to Amazon. Apparently Netflix was originally bidding in a bidding war with Amazon, and Amazon won, and Netflix still considers it the one that got away.
But yeah, that's kind of surprising when you look at it, because I did look at the Emmy results, and it definitely stood out that it was Amazon, Netflix, and HBO that basically won everything,
mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, is that why we're getting, like, evil being more risque?
Right. I think this is the tipping point. We've talked about this before, but when you and I worked at the video store,
yeah.
And Netflix became a thing, and I'm not talking Netflix streaming.
No,
that
no.
Didn't exist back then.
No.
The DVDs mailed to your house.
Yeah.
And we were like, this is going to end video stores.
Yeah.
And it took a little while.
It took a while.
But it did.
Yeah.
I think that this is proof that streaming is taking over. And now that we've got Peacock and we've got CBS All Access and, you know, Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus, I think that streaming is going to take over for basic network channels before you realize it.
I feel like, here's the thing. This is what I think. I think people need to realize that, okay, people want to watch our shows, but they don't want to pay for cable.
Yeah.
You know? And they also realize, like, well, we offer ABC, CBS, Fox, all these over the air for free.
Mm.
You do, but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because now instead of analog signal, you have a digital signal. The digital signal doesn't go as far as the analog signal used to. And with the analog, you could watch it if it was a little fuzzy. But with digital, it's either there or it's not. And if it's not there, if it's partially there, it's all pixelated.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't watch. It's unwatchable. Unlike you could watch it through the snow on analog. Or at least have somewhat of a picture so you know, I got to turn my antenna this way or this way. Well, now, like, my best example is that where I live now for the last 3 years, with my antenna, which is just a set of rabbit ears on a bookshelf, I get 17 channels. I get ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS, and all the and Fox, and all their sub-channels. So it ends up being 17 channels. Now, ABC doesn't always come in. It depends on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And NBC is, can be touchy, but CBS, Fox, and PBS, no problems no matter what. I lived literally the next street over. You know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. But, like, from walking from my front door now to the front door, walking just, like, literally, I can see the old house I lived in that I was renting, and I can walk from here to their house through my backyard. It's 100 feet, 200 feet tops. Over there, my antenna, got nothing. Maybe Fox once in a while, but I got nothing, no matter where I put the antenna in the house. That's the problem with the digital signal. Mm-hmm. So this is what I think these networks need to do. They need to do what CW did. CW released an app with all their shows on it, so you can watch all their shows, and it's free.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to deal with commercials, you know? Then you have people like, but so when CBS All Access comes out with an app, they shouldn't just be offering an app that you have to pay for to use. They should be offering the app that you can pay for on-demand content and their exclusive content, but they should give you access to live stream what's on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like all these network channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, they need to be able to give you the power to just download the app on your TV or your devices or whatever it is and click on live and be able to watch live TV without paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sit through the commercials like you do if you grab it with your antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd see their viewerships go up.
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, actually with my TV, I have a Roku TV. I actually can set up I can plug a hard drive into it, like a blank hard drive, and make my own DVR.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so you can actually create your own DVRs now.
Right.
You don't need to have a special desktop set-top box. You can literally just plug it in and make your own DVR now.
Yep.
So, anyways, that's that.
That's Mike's thoughts on things.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds are working together on a musical Scrooge.
I'll watch the hell out of this.
I will watch the hell out of this.
Ryan Reynolds is going to be Bob Cratchit.
I have no idea.
And Will Ferrell be Ebenezer Scrooge, because that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be. I love it.
I'll watch
it. I love it already. And it's musical, so. Arrow is going to be spinning. We're going to get a spinoff series, The Canaries. It's going to take place in the future. It's focusing on Mia Smoke, who was Oliver and Felicity's daughter.
Yeah.
Remember how they kept doing the flash forwards this past season that I told you about?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to focus on that time period with Felicity's daughter, sorry.
Yeah.
And then Dinah and Katie Cassidy as the two black canaries that we've had. They both exist in the future, so that's going to be a spinoff series.
Doesn't excite me.
Don't know if I care. Yeah.
And it's going to take place in the future, so that means it's out of the Arrowverse.
Yes. But it's still in the Arrowverse because these are all...
It's still in, but it's out. They can't be part of, like, next year's event.
Unless somehow they use the Legends time travel.
Isn't the Legends supposed to be done this season?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
The Ghost Rider series is no longer moving forward at Hulu. I'm very upset about
that. That's too bad. I enjoyed the original series.
I did, too.
I did not enjoy the series on CBS after it left PBS.
Right.
On Saturday mornings, that was dumb. The Ghost Rider Mysteries. But I enjoy the original Ghost Rider on PBS right after Square One TV on Sundays.
See, all I'm thinking about is this was... You know what I'm talking about. Not Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider.
Oh, no.
Like MCU. Like,
Ghost
Gabriel,
Rider.
Gabriel
no.
Luna.
Oh, Ghost... Okay, yes. I thought, okay, so they're bringing back Ghost Rider, that PBS show.
Okay.
About the ghost that writes to them.
Right.
Ghost Rider. That's what I thought you were talking about.
No.
Oh, I don't know.
No, Hulu was going to be bringing Gabriel Luna back from
Agents
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, Agency Ghost
and now
Rider.
It's not anymore.
Yes. Okay, well.
That was hilarious. And if we weren't so tired, it would have been even funnier.
Wires crossed.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Dirty Priest from season 2 of Fleabag.
Yes.
Okay, he was also Moriarty in Sherlock.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He's going to be the lead in a new TV series based on the book The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Really?
Yes, he will be.
Oh.
The lead character. Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
I'm excited about that one. I think it's coming to Amazon.
Oh,
if
nice.
I'm not mistaken. Let me make sure that I got everything here. There's one other piece of news that I've been holding on to because I just can't get over this. They are rebooting. And when I say rebooting, they say that they are, like, they're starting back from scratch. They're going to pretend like the original series didn't happen type of thing. And they're just going to start back at the beginning of the story. But they're keeping the same story.
Okay.
They're rebooting Walker, Texas Ranger. So they're saying that it's going to be the same story about a guy who was special forces, comes back, you know, tries to clean things up, and, you know, he's got the family troubles.
Becomes Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But they're not going to say, oh, it's the next generation after Chuck Norris. They're saying this is taking over the Chuck Norris.
Okay. So it's a reboot.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's going to play Walker?
I could ask you to guess, but you would never guess in a million years.
Okay.
Even though it's not one of those, like,
Chuck Norris?
No.
Okay.
No? Yeah. You would guess that. No. I couldn't believe this, and I had to read it, like, three times. Jared Padalecki. Yes. Sam Winchester. Not Dean.
Sam
Winchester.
Soft-spoken, kind-hearted Sam who came from the Gilmore Girls to Supernatural.
Yeah. With the long, wavy hair and the...
Is it going to become Walker, Texas Ranger?
Now, if I had said Dean...
Oh, I'd totally believe it.
Absolutely. I could see him being the rough and tumble, kick-ass cowboy.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with this.
Me too.
Yeah. I thought that they misprinted it. I thought they meant to say Jensen Ackles. But no. And I... Granted, maybe it's because of the height thing. You know, Jensen is kind of a short guy, but...
Sorry, Chuck Norris isn't that tall.
No, he's not.
That's
so Jared Padalecki is going to be the new Chuck Norris.
Okay, that seems weird.
What do you think Chuck Norris thinks about that?
I don't know. I don't think he's very positive about that at all.
I saw that, and like I said, I read it like three or four different times. I'm like, I must be reading this wrong. Well, and like I said, it's going to be a reboot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
So that's all I got.
All right, well, I'm done as well. So that's the show. I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
Later.